It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running for this 22nd day of January 2019. This is the Horn HeadOn.live is where you'll find easy access to the stream as well as easy access to the chat room. If, in fact, you pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in, well, by Jove, you'll be met by the likes of Anatole and Laurel and Otto Deschott and Squeaky and capably moderated by Pinch Hit Midweek chat utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, that day when we celebrate those moments of Titanic white wing intellect that are the synaptic and neuron-driven equivalents of seeing an iceberg dead ahead and saying, let's show that thing a thing or two. Yeah, because that's what right-wing intellectualism gets you. And the iceberg always wins. Yes, yes. Just as a gentle reminder, the Titanic Tuesday tradition goes way back in Horn history to a day when our buddy Jim, long ago now, was listening to the local White Wing morning broadcaster over in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market, as he droned on with his stunningly stultifying monotone, as he read the morning paper to his mouth walking, knuckle breathing followers, and one of them called in and said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that we got seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I was down in the coal mines one time, and I done seed 'em, and we ain't nowhere's near the beach." To which Steve replied, "Well, caller." And really, there's too much expression in the way I do my impression of him. It was even flatter than that. It was flatter than piss on a plate. "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And thus, with the phrase Titanic plates, was Titanic Tuesday born on the Horn. Of course, we know the whereabouts of the Titanic plates, but we're still looking for the that Titanic sushi rolling mat. Mm-hmm. So that's the origin of Titanic Tuesday, and from 1 week to the next, it's just a steady weekly, week in, week out parade of white wing intellect. And we'll get into it momentarily, but first we have what? Yes, thanks. We extend thanks at the beginning of the program to all of our subscribers. And in this particular instance, we have thanks to send out to Earl. Hey, Earl, thank you very much for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks as well to Jamie. Thank you for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks to Tirani. Much appreciated. Thank you to Michael. Your participation as a subscriber means more than we know. And thanks to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California. Thank you, Felicia, for making helping to make the horn possible every month. And thanks to Bill. Thank you, Bill, very kindly for your subscription as well. If you would like to be a subscriber to the horn, well, it's very easy. We call them subscriptions, but the fact of the matter is it's just a monthly commitment to kick in somewhere, in the case of a $10 a month subscription, somewhere around the princely sum of a little more than 15 cents per hour for every hour of radio that is produced here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Trump Ginyistan. Liberal radio, independent radio, progressive radio, beholden to no corporate overlords, beholden to no soap companies, beholden to no advertiser, no buy gold now companies, no bowling balls dropping on Swedish mattresses made of foam developed by NASA companies, no sense of obligation to try to wheedle you into purchasing a crummy Bose Wave radio or a General Steel building or a bunch of flooring that was taken from the ongoing relentless deforestation of the last great forested parts of the globe. None of that. None of that. Just the determination of a small handful of the horn community to make sure that this program remains on the air. And frankly, January, the first month of 2019, has proven tough. January is often tough because all the Christmas stuff begins to come due. And in this particular instance, yeah, it's particularly hard because of the shutdown and what it's doing to a lot of people. I wish more than you know that I was independently wealthy so that I could just say, hey, we're going to take everything we got this month and we're going to kick it toward the hardworking federal employees who have been screwed out of their paychecks by the chlamydia Claudius, a man who does not give a damn about anyone except himself and possibly precious Ivanka. And maybe Junior. He's a good boy. He's almost 40. That good boy. Right. So I do at least have to update us. Now, it's kind of a scary number. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Nydia for putting a challenge on the table last night. Nydia kicked in $50. And said if there's another $50 to match it, that she would kick in another $50 on top. Well, before the program ended last night, we managed to raise $35 of the $50, and that leaves $15 to go. So that leaves us. So as far as an evening's fundraising goal, let's see. $687, another $15, and it goes down to, boy, with the ciphering, it goes down to $622 if we can raise $15 here in a little bit, in the next little bit, and then we can go to work on the $622 hole that we're in. I don't think even Lassie can help us if she was to manage to go and get the sheriff. But that's where we stand. If we raise $15, the fundraising goal goes down to $622. We're hoping, I'm hoping, I hope you're hoping, to end the, $602. I just had to add factor something else in. And thank you to our dear friend Jude. in the Great Northwest. So 602 if we get another $15 in. But the hope is that we will actually finish fundraising for the month of January by Thursday so that we can begin and have a fundraising-free Friday on the front porch. And that could be a rollicking good time because that's where the subscribers would kick in for the final week of the month of January. And there it is. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Hung Like Jesus. Thank you so much, Hung. So now we're down to 602. 602, that's, oh God, here we go again. That's, ten people at $60 and two cents. Is that it? Yeah. Something like that. But anyway, 602 is, and then otherwise for prayer meeting Wednesday, the deacons are going to probably rebel because we'll be trying to raise 802. Thank you, brother. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Sizzling hot on both Titanic streams, the White House is forging ahead with its State of the Union plans for January 29th. With the will the degenerate sewer rat have the galls to say the State of the Union is strong despite the six-week-old government shutdown? Contact your local bookie for details. Yay, we've just dropped below the $600 mark. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to our buddy Otto Deschott. $15, I can handle that, says Otto. So 602, 597, 587. 587 is where we stand. So that's that is very helpful indeed. That means that Nydia's challenge was met and then some. So we're off and running with something approaching a little bit of hope. Okay, where to begin this evening? Well, it is Titanic Tuesday. And that means that we have to bring to the fore some manifest stupidity from the white wing in this country. Where, oh, where will we ever find something like that? Well, you know, sometimes the stupidity takes a dangerous form. I mean, there's one of my favorite pieces of historical fiction is Gary Jennings's Aztec. I don't know how many times I've read it, but it's a beautifully made book. And there's a passage in there, as I have mentioned in the past, where a differentiation is made between two kinds of being mentally ill. And I'm trying to, there it is. There it is. Are you Tlawele, friend, or merely Xolopitli? And my not pronunciation is for shit. But the difference being, are you just unbalanced, or are you criminally insane? And so the Tlawele Xolopitli debate continues. And this is kind of weird, because when I first saw the story, and this happens to you, or to me at least, in the course of doing prep and everything on a fairly regular basis, because for some reason or another, the algorithms will make news stories social media platforms will make old news stories pop up a couple of years after they were actually fresh and relevant. And so it was that I saw an article from the Daily Beast, and I thought, wait a minute, this was years ago. And it turns out, no, it's not. Do you remember, those of you who have been around the community that long, do you remember a story, and I'm pretty sure it was Dr. John who brought it to our attention back then. A Republican candidate for House, so this would be at least 2016, maybe 14 even, and preacher, of course, had gotten busted for planning to slaughter the people who lived in a little community in upstate New York called Islamburg. They were a group who had left the urban confines of New York, I think, and gone out to set up a community out in the country. There's actually a long American tradition of running out to upstate New York to set up a utopian community, although in the 19th century it was mostly white folks doing it. But in this case, it was a group of African Americans who happened to be Muslim, and they went to set up their own little community and have their own school and live near each other and, you know, be happy to the best of their abilities on this all-too-brief sojourn on this little blue-green marble that's hurtling in a sort of helical fashion along with the rest of the solar system and the galaxy through the universe. But no, the white folks, including the Republican preacher candidate, congressional candidate, got caught as they were making plans to go up and try to slaughter all those American citizens who lived in Islamburg and just happened to not share the same religious convictions of, say, the white folks who wanted to do the slaughtering. That was years ago, and of course the preacher got off with a slap on the wrist, and so did the other white folks. And when it turns out that you can threaten to slaughter people in a town, and all you get is a Laurel and Hardy handshake from some federal judge, well, why not try it again? Now, I'm not being flippant, but the fact of the matter is, Reuters broke the story. The Daily Beast ran with it. The dateline would be Greece, New York. You know, it's really neat. Upstate New York is full of communities that are named after classical cities from the classical world. There's Greece, New York. There's Troy, New York. There's Ithaca, New York. Most of which come out of the Iliad and the Odyssey. Kirsten Gillibrand, for instance, chose to kick off her presidential bid in Troy, New York, which I found rather interesting and ironic because Troy, New York, not that far from the Massachusetts line, is the fictionalized setting of a town called Ilium, New York. Ilium being another word meaning the city of the Trojans. And Ilium, New York, in, say, Player Piano, is a place that is depressed and dysfunctional because, lo and behold, and remember, this is Kurt Vonnegut's first novel written in 1959. Because people have been replaced by automation and by robots. And so there's really no need for the heavy industrial population that had originally formed the population base of Ilium, New York. But anyway, Greece, New York is the dateline for this story, where four people, I guess I probably don't have to say, yeah, white people, decided that the people of Islamburg, New York, needed a proper slaughtering. But this went beyond the planning stages, like which was the case with the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian preacher and congressional candidate. These assholes, and I think but people who want to bomb other people for not following the right God, I think we can generally categorize them as assholes. You know, we might do better in this country if we referred to people like this broadly, generally, and in public, and on the massive platforms of the multimillionaire for-profit media as assholes. But no, the court documents heretofore filed show that the suspects had multiple IEDs. That would be improvised explosive devices. And that they bore the shape of medium to large-sized cylinders and mason jars wrapped in duct tape. You know, there's so many nice things you can do with a mason jar. You can can things in it. Apple butter in the fall. Or you can make the cough suppressant toddy recipe that I sent to Tracy last night in an effort to help still her persisting and nagging and aggravating cough, the remnant of her journey through the land of pneumonia. You can take a mason jar and you can, instead of packing it with nails and gunpowder and shit, you can pour in a bag of dried cherries and just pour brandy to the top of it and screw the lid on it and set it away somewhere for, you know, a couple of weeks. Put it in the back of the fridge. Forget it's there. And then maybe one day you get out some vanilla ice cream and you put those brandy, you can use vodka too, brandy-soaked cherries over it, and it is yum-yum delicious. But no, these assholes packed mason jars with, oh, you know, the usual stuff, ball bearings, screws, nails, broken glass, you know, shrapnel. Investigators further indicated that they also got 23 rifles and shotguns, all of which were, and, well now, legally obtained, which makes all four of these lawful gun owners, you know, the folks that the people over there at the National Rifle, I mean, Ruble, no, right, no, no, definitely the National Ruble Association claim to represent. More on the National Ruble Association in a minute, perhaps. They found them in a number of different homes because these four guys weren't living together. And there were three IEDs in one of the suspects' home. They're all charged with the intent to use the bombs. Maybe the second reference, journalistically speaking. You can say IED the first time. The next time you need to say bombs! To blow up Little Islamburg, New York. It's about 150 miles northwest of New York City. And in this case, it's not some elderly, creepy preacher with a desire to be a member of Congress. No, this is sort of a compass point toward where we are and maybe where we're going. We're talking about Brian Colinieri. He's 20. Andrew Chrysell is 18. Vincent Vetromile is 19. And there's a 16-year-old whose name is being withheld because the laws about juveniles and crime are such that we do not release the names of 16-year-old assholes who manifest a desire to go and murder people for being Muslim, or go and murder people generally. There are more details about the story, or about the plot. They pulled the plot together over on a chat service that gamers use called Discord. The big break in the investigation came when the 16-year-old is said to have shown a picture of another student to a group of kids there at his school and said, "He looks like a school shooter, doesn't he?" And under the rubric of if you hear something, say something, one of the students who heard that reported the comment to a grown-up, and the investigation was off and running. So far, apparently, these kids are not well off enough to be able to hire a PR firm, one of whose partners is a former protege of Karl Rove. They haven't been able to do that yet. So that must mean that one of their mommies is not a vice president for Fidelity Investments. You know, like Mrs. Sandman is. And there's a sociological question to be sorted out here as to why we have 20, 19, 18, and 16-year-old bigots and racists who want to blow up people for the simple fact that they are trying to live together in peace in a community 150 miles northwest of New York City. Well, you know, if only they'd called their town Jesus Land instead of Islamburg. Anybody want to guess how mommy and daddy vote? Wait a minute, we got a 20-year-old and a 19-year-old and an 18-year-old here. Anybody want to guess how they vote? MAGA, y'all. I could be wrong. Probably not. But I could be wrong. And bless their hearts, the members of the community of Islamburg, they're staying put. They're just kind of acclimated now to the idea that every now and then some white folks are going to get caught trying to murder them to death. 'Cause Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, under God. I gotta fix the reverb. But I said there would be more on the National Ruble Association. And there is. You know, if you are a regular of this program, then you're familiar, I hope, with the fact that I have suggested for months and months and months now that the National Rifle Association, by dint of its own desires or avarice or basic un-Americanism, decided to get in bed with Vlad Putin and Mother Russia to help make sure that the 2016 election went to the Republicans generally and to Donald J. Trump, Julius Geezer, specifically. Months I've been saying that. Guess what? The folks over at CNN have reported that special counsel Robert Mueller is taking a look at the strange and wonderful relationship between Mother Russia and the National Ruble Association. Yeah. It goes back to something that Sam Nunberg said to CNN. He told them, when I was interviewed by the special counsel's office, I was asked about the Trump campaign and our dealings with the NRA. How about that? The special counsel's team, he continued, was curious to learn more about how Donald Trump and his operatives first formed a relationship with the NRA and how Trump wound up speaking at the group's annual meeting in 2015, mere months, just months, he said, before announcing his presidential bid. Uh-huh. And, of course, this fits rather snugly with the relationship that young Maria Butina, who was only innocent college student trying to get American education at your George Washington University in Washington, D.C., began playing footsie with the NRA under the guise that I am loving Second Amendment of the United States Constitution. I am loving keeping and arming bears. So it's natural I would want to get together with National Rifle Association and perhaps try to set up sister organization in Mother Russia. Yeah, really. I wish I was kidding. But I'm not. There's nothing American about the NRA. They are an entirely self-interested group that more than a year ago, I've been, for years even, perhaps, I've been trying to explain that the NRA's goal is actually to overturn constitutional governance as we understand it and reduce America for the sake of nothing more than gun sales at the time to essentially Somalia with better cable and internet, where everybody has to have 150 bajillion guns because, well, and what did Wayne the Peter say? America is a dangerous place. And the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. In fact, they were still clinging to that bullshit notion, that utterly indefensible, stupid idea. As recently as this weekend, when their post marking the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial National Holiday suggested that it was a straight-up claim that MLK applied for a concealed carry permit in what the NRA describes as a may carry state, a may issue state. In other words, a state where the law for a concealed carry permit says, upon proper application, the sheriff may issue a concealed carry permit. The NRA, of course, being proponents of shall issue. In other words, if you show up at the sheriff's office with a pulse and the fee, the sheriff shall issue you a concealed carry permit. This, of course, is a stopgap on the way to what we now have in West Virginia, which is no permit required concealed carry, otherwise known as the oops, blam, pray, thank you, Joy, approach to firearms management. Because there you are, you're having a good time at the Starbucks, and you've got your Freedom Protector, and it's got one in the chamber, because you never know when you're going to have to whip it out and take down some, let's see, what was the phrase? Bad hombres. That's what Julius Geezer used. You're sitting there having your half-calf venti decaf mocha latte with soy milk foam there at the local Starbucks, and in comes some bad hombres. Wah, wah, wah. And you've got to take them out with your Freedom Protector. But instead of that happening, what happens instead is somebody walks by your table and your purse gets knocked over and your Freedom Protector falls out of it. And because you got one in the chamber, the striker-fired mechanism inside the pistol causes the gun to just go off. That's a complicated journalism term for the discharge of a negligently maintained firearm. And so the gun just goes off and the bullet exits the muzzle of the pistol and shoots your best friend that was just seconds ago was happily sitting there having her grande mocha caramel macchiato half calf cappuccino with soy milk foam, and suddenly has a massive femoral artery breach, and you're just sitting there. Well, it just went off while your friend might just happen to be bleeding out on the floors of your local Starbucks because freedom. And the whole Starbucks thing really happened. Of course, it happened down in Florida. The headline began, Florida woman, because Florida woman is every bit as interesting an anthropological creature as Florida man. Titanic Tuesday, yeah. And by the way, after the racist, vicious, bigoted, xenophobic freak out perpetrated by those wacky, zany, well-meaning kids who show up to basketball games in blackface at Covington Catholic High School. After all of that, well, the grift is now on. I don't know why GoFundMe hasn't shut this campaign down, but they haven't. Hashtag stand with Covington and the unborn. $50,000 goal. So far, they've raised $6,540 with 202 assholes contributing to it. Uh-huh. C.J. Pearson is behind this particular grift. Let's look up C.J. Pearson, shall we? Do let's. C.J. P-A-R-S-O-N. There's actually a website called C.J. Pearson. The left's youngest nightmare, young, black, and unapologetically Republican, CJ keeps the left up at night. Featured in CNN, Fox News, The Daily Caller, The Independent Journal Review, The Washington Post, C.J. Pearson.
I haven't missed a moment's sleep over C.J. Pearson.
He's a high school junior and prominent conservative online personality who has amassed more than 370,000 likes on Facebook, more than 220,000 followers on Twitter, and more than 100 million views on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter combined. A lifelong Georgian raised by Democrats.
Really?
A lifelong Georgian raised by wolves. No. CJ has taken a path in life few would expect. He became a conservative in second grade before he even knew what the word meant. Oh, I added that last part. Emerged as a national online presence and is described as the left's youngest nightmare, a title he wears with pride.
Well, now that Jesse Lee Peterson's been canned from Newsmuck TV, maybe they can slip young CJ into that slot. Yeah, grifter's gonna grift. Happens. Yeah, oh well. Yeah, look at this. We are 42 minutes into the program. That's not a time check. I'm not cheating. We're 42 minutes into the program and have managed not to particularly directly reference any details about Julius Geezer. Yet. I mean, he's been mentioned. But let's go ahead and pull the hip boots on. And jump into the white wing cesspool inhabited by the 72-year-old orange man baby. Over at NPR, their senior editor Ron Elving got an advance copy of a new book called Team of Vipers. I've seen this mentioned several times on the air today. Authored by a fellow named Cliff Sims, who was a special advisor to the president for a little while inside the Trump maladministration. And having written his tell-all, he's got some interesting stories. As described by Ron Elving over talking with Brooke Baldwin at CNN. Well, let's just take a minute and check out the exchange between the two, shall we? What fun.
Chaos, dysfunction, and duplicity among the president, his family members, and administration officials. The book is called Team of Vipers.
You got to admit, it's a great... It's a great title. So let's bring on Ron Elving.
Senior editor and correspondent for NPR. He has gotten his hands on this book and has devoured it. And so, Ron, let's get right into the details. Good to have you on. I want you to tell me some stories. Let's start with, here are two words for you, Paul Ryan.
There are many scenes between the president and the Speaker of the House in early 2017.
Okay, I almost screwed up. Get the hockey puck. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape. Because if you don't, you're going to be... And the neighbors, especially if in an apartment or condo situation, Well, you might wind up with a wellness check from the local constabulary. Yeah, we don't need that. So,
but
the speaker comes up to the White House with Mike Pence, the vice president, to explain how tax reform is going to work in all of its.
Oh, that had to go over beautifully, don't you think? Explaining how tax reform works to a high functioning, low intellect. Real estate grifter from Jamaica, Queens. Well, Mr. President, what we do is we're gonna steal from the future of the working class in this country, and we're gonna give it to all our friends, your friends and my friends too. And then when the economy begins to tank, we're gonna say we've got to tighten our belts, and we're gonna starve Granny, because Granny starving is what I'm most famous for, and we'll wipe out Medicare and Social Security, because we'll claim that we can't afford it anymore, and we need some entitlement reform. And it, but the problem is, Trump didn't care about, you know. Julius Geezer is not a detail-oriented guy. He just wants to find out, when do I get a check?
Wonderful mechanistic detail. This does not interest the president very much, and after the conversation's gone on for a while, he literally gets up while Paul Ryan is in mid-description and wanders out of the Oval Office and down the hallway into a side room where one can hear the television being switched on.
Really? You got that, right? So here's this nominally highfalutin discussion of conservative Republican economics and the dire necessity for tax reform. And Julius Geezer, like something out of Being There, you know the movie, Chance the Gardener, who becomes Chauncey Gardener, and who, by the way, is taken in by a Republican, a wealthy Republican, and is courted by the Republican intelligentsia because they can't tell the difference between a moron and a populist genius. Well, Chance the Gardener is a moron, an idiot. He's lived a sheltered life, has never had to deal with anything resembling reality, and when he gets kicked out of the old man's house because the old man dies, and goes walking down the streets of Washington, D.C., accompanied by the strains of Richard Strauss's Also Sprach Zarathustra, you know, that 2001 music. Besides the clothes on his back, he makes sure to take with him the remote control to the television set. And eventually, he meets some young African-American toughs. And when he feels threatened by them, he takes out his remote control and tries to change the channel. Tell me if this is striking anything resembling a chord for you relative to the... And there are points... Okay, so this is during the absolute prime of Shirley MacLaine, and she plays the ingenue. She's the first one who recognizes his genius. The Chance being, of course, played by the inimitable Peter Sellers, who really should have gotten an Academy Award for that. Chance speaks in a lot of monosyllabic words, or bisyllabic, not a lot of polysyllabic. And Shirley MacLaine is, of course, this is an old movie, so I don't feel like I'm providing spoilers. She's married to the really, 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 really old, played by, I think, Melvin Douglas, Republican gajillionaire. And she's got sort of his permission and his understanding that, you know, she has needs. Because she's a lot younger than the old Republican gajillionaire. And there's a scene, and the minute I read this story, the reason I'm telling you this is because the instant I read this story, it's the way my mind works. I started watching this movie again, this particular scene, in my mind. Because back in the early 80s, I guess it was, you remember what TVs were like? It's almost hard to recall, because now TVs, as Ray Bradbury, by the way, predicted, take up entire walls. But back then, a 25-inch diagonal screen was effing huge. And we had these rickety little metal carts so you could roll them around. And so, bless her heart, Shirley MacLaine is making her play for Chance, who has no idea what sex is. And he turns on the TV, and unless I'm mistaken, he either starts watching Captain Kangaroo or Mr. Rogers. And instead of this being a clue that there is something desperately amiss with Chance the Gardener, it's taken as a further indication of his lofty intellect and his offbeat genius. And so here we have an account, apparently from this book, Team of Vipers by Cliff Sims, or Cliff Sim, of almost, I mean, you know, minus the sexy time, almost the same thing happening.
Reform is going to work in all of its wonderful mechanistic detail. This does not interest the president very much, and after the conversation's gone on for a while, he literally gets up while Paul Ryan is in mid-description and wanders out of the Oval Office and down the hallway into a side room where one can hear the television being switched on. And eventually Mike Pence gets up, goes down the hall, brings the president back, and they finish the conversation. There are a number of stories like that about Paul Ryan and Donald Trump.
Oh, a number of them like that. Not just one. A number of them. One is a number, but I take it from NPR senior editor Ron Elving that the number he has in mind when he says there are a number of these, that one is not the number he's thinking of. Guess which number? It ain't one. That's just one example. Dear God. You know, to a certain extent, we are lucky that he hasn't accidentally blown up the fucking planet. At one point, after Chance's become a celebrity, sitting at the home, because she too has been kicked out, is the former housekeeper, Louise, an African-American woman. This may be the clip. I'm not sure. Nope, 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 nope. But she says along the way, I swear all you got to be is white in this country to get anything you want. Meanwhile, Scott in San Diego, subject line, being there. Being there, like Network, were both prophetic films. There's abundant evidence of this on news channels and in the White House today. Anyone who hasn't seen these two classics really needs to. By the way, the music that accompanied Chance the Gardener's walk through some pretty rough D.C. neighborhoods in the early moments of the film is my favorite version of Also Sprach Zarathustra, performed by Brazilian musician Oimir Deodato. Flavio will tell me if I have screwed up the pronunciation, because Flavio is one of the horns, a member of the horns ad hoc pronouncing things committee. Tracy, subject line, seriously? Going back to young C.J. Pearson. So is he the black Alex P. Keaton? C.J. Pearson's parents must be proud. I'm so tired of Uncle Tom foolery, says Tracy. It's especially sad that someone so young is already drinking the Kool-Aid. With a deep and heavy sigh. That's Tracy's deep and heavy sigh. Your friend, Tracy. Yeah, I know. But please remember, Tracy, everybody has to get paid. And you gotta give them credit. This is a great shtick. I mean, this is top shelf restaurant quality shtick. We will bill him as a principled, conservative, young African American man. And then he can make bank. I mean, you do see the genius of it, right? You just have to have a little bit of larceny in your soul. Same thing that applies to being a televangelist. So it literally the exact same thing. A little bit, a portion of charisma, an ability to project earnestness. And we're pretty much off and running. Hey, thanks to send out. Thanks very kindly to Mark. Thank you very, very much indeed, Mark. That helps a lot. I think that takes us down to 557. 557 that we're trying to crawl out of the hole we're in. 55 people at $10. 10 people at $55. One person at 557. No. But thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly. We will we'll get there. I just want to get there by Friday so we can have a fundraising free Friday on the front porch. I can't remember having one of those in a while. So I tell you what, we've gone through the filibobster here. Let's take a quick break. It's Tuesday. That means we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And I do so very much enjoy that. We'll go to the phones. One line's open. The stress line is open if you want to jump in. 844-843-4676. 844, the horn. The other line is presently engaged. And we'll see what the evening brings us. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
It's Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019.
Half a dozen people told Reuters Saturday their family members were just desperate to fill up their cars to get to work.
Tragedy in Mexico as leaking pipeline explodes.
We don't have enough staff resources to really get the job done that we need to get done.
Trump's government shutdown threatens to make U.S. wildfires even worse. A federal judge halts seismic testing permits during the shutdown. Plus,
we're talking about heat waves over and over and over again.
Australia's historic heat wave is melting roads and decimating wildlife.
All of that decimation and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Day 26 of the government shutdown, and vital services are being threatened. For instance, I've run out of shutdown jokes.
I know the feeling. This is your Green News Report.
We might have to dip into the National Reserve at this point.
Okay, Desi Doyen, disastrous, heartbreaking situation down in Mexico with yet another pipeline explosion.
Yes, it's a real tragedy in Mexico. Officials say more than 90 people have died from a fuel pipeline explosion and fire in central Mexico, and the toll is expected to rise. The explosion occurred late on Friday as hundreds of villagers in the state of Hidalgo rushed to collect fuel from a pipeline spill amid a government crackdown on fuel theft that has triggered a widespread gasoline shortage. Mexico's state-owned oil company Pemex is also under renewed scrutiny for its reaction to the blast because it reportedly knew the pipeline was leaking for several hours but did not shut it off.
More than 90, you say, were killed?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
In Australia, a relentless, historic heat wave shows no signs of letting up, with temperatures as much as 21 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than normal across the continent. The current extreme heat wave is melting roads, withering crops, causing stone fruits to burn from the inside out. Officials are pumping oxygen into rivers and lakes to stop fish kills in hot, oxygen-depleted rivers. 5 of the country's hottest 10 days on record have all occurred just this summer.
That's a thing? You can pump oxygen into rivers and lakes to try to keep the fish alive?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Earlier in the season, a third of Australia's threatened spectacled flying fox bat species died in a 2-day period.
Wow.
Here in the U.S., forestry experts are warning that wildfire prevention is yet another casualty of President Donald Trump's high-stakes shutdown of the federal government to demand funding for his border wall. Prevention measures to reduce the risk of out-of-control wildfires, like controlled burns and debris clearing, which usually take place during the winter, have been halted during this ongoing shutdown. It's now the longest in U.S. history.
Well, I guess we don't have to worry. I'm sure the next wildfire season won't be bad at all. No preparation needed.
Colorado State Forester Mike Lester told CBS Denver that the shutdown has drastically reduced staffing at the U.S. Forest Service during this crucial window of opportunity.
Every day we miss, where we have snow on the ground and good atmospheric conditions, is a day that we can't reclaim. We don't have enough staff resources to really get the job done that we need to get done.
Meanwhile, toxic coal ash waste is contaminating groundwater in at least 22 states. That's according to the utility industry's own data compiled by the nonprofit Environmental Integrity Project and Earth Justice. Coal ash is the toxic waste left over after coal is burned to generate electricity. In Illinois, toxic heavy metals were detected in the groundwater
have never
of
had
22
it so good.
Out
viewers
of 24
today can
coal ash
endless
dump
amounts
sites
of cool content
in Georgia
on increasingly
at 11
diverse
of 12
screens.
Sites.
But for advertisers,
in Texas,
it's never been harder to find and reach audiences effectively. For example, 96% of millennials.
This is at the same time that Donald Trump's EPA is lifting rules and restrictions on mercury and so forth in our drinking water?
Yes, it is. But finally, there is a bit of good news. A federal judge has temporarily blocked some parts of the Trump administration's efforts to expand offshore oil exploration in the Atlantic, broadly opposed by a range of coastal cities, businesses, and conservation organizations. The judge ruled that the administration cannot issue permits allowing undersea seismic blasting off the Atlantic coast while the government shutdown continues.
But once it starts up again, they can do it under the Trump administration and endanger the population of whales.
Yes, but it does buy marine wildlife some time.
So, good thing we're having this shutdown.
Sort of.
For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Under the sea. Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea.
The flying spectacled fox bat. I have to check in with Brad and Desi on that. Something just makes me think that's speckled. That, call me crazy. Hey, let's run over and check in with Scott out in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
San Diego. Good Lord. God's country. Man, last week, we got a shit ton of rain, and we needed it. But man, it was like it would never stop. But it finally did.
And that's that's all the rain you're going to get for the next 365 days or so?
No, we'll probably get, you know, drips and drabs here and there. Normally, since I've been out here, the rainy season generally goes, when things are true to form, it generally goes from like November through January, maybe a little into February. And then, you know, we get May gray and June gloom, which is basically overcast skies for the majority of May and June. And then, bam, July, we're right into, you know, scorch the earth.
So, well, I was kind of wondering how many home game rainouts there are in an average Padres season.
Oh, no, I'm sure there have been... No, well, wait a minute. Maybe not. Because baseball runs from April till, well, in the case of the Padres, April through August. But April through what? Late September, first bits of October?
Yeah, and this is a classic Mediterranean climate, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's Mediterranean is the right word for this climate. It's quite nice. I mean, although we at night, even, you know, on the east part of San Diego County, like 8, 10, 12 miles inland, it gets colder than a warlock's bollocks in the winter at night. And even in the daytime, it gets pretty chilly. And here on the coastal region, a couple of weeks ago, the overnight low was like 37, which is pretty damn cold if you're not used to it. I know my friends and the Horn family in the Midwest, in the North, in the East Coast, they just laugh out loud when they hear me talk about, you know, 36, 37 degrees being cold. They just laugh.
And yeah, we're gonna have like here. Welcome to two old white guys talking about the weather. brought to you by Metamucil.
And I'm older than you.
We're going to have an overnight low tonight of 31, and that's going to be downright balmy.
Oh, God. I do not miss it, Bob. I do not miss it. And
well,
snow...
you've at least lived in it, Scott. So you understand what I'm talking about. But the fact of the matter is, it was 44 degrees, and I walked out in one of those waffle weave insulated Henley kind of shirts.
Yeah.
And it was like, damn, this may be a little too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we're not as far away from naked radio as I thought.
Isn't it interesting how it's all relative? I remember times now. Well, and by the way, don't just brush over so quickly with you've lived in it. I grew up in the D.C. area and then spent the better part of 20 years in the Midwest.
Oh, so, no, that's exactly what I'm getting at.
Okay, all right, but it didn't go by as fast as you were able to say it. Those were long, arduous years. And I wake up today and I look on the news in parts of the country where they've gotten hellacious snow, and people are dropping dead from shoveling.
Yeah. By the way, you did get a response. I got a note from Jenny in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Who is a kindred spirit and a damn fine painter, by the way. I keep her painting of the sand hills of Wisconsin proudly hanging on the wall here in the studio. And she said, "Ha ha, I did laugh. I cooked pizza outside in -2. Ha ha."
I remember in Kansas City, where I spent the better part of the 1980s, doing most of my radio work, I remember a winter that had everything. This would have been at some point in the 80s. And we had a string of days where the daytime high only got up to about 8 degrees. This is not counting wind chill factor or any of that stuff. 2 or 3 days, the high temperature was like 8 degrees in the Kansas City area that I was in. And then not too long afterward, we had daytime highs in the low to mid-20s. And you actually, this is why I'm saying it's all relative, you actually felt as if you could break out the barbecue grill, your lawn chair, your cutoffs, and a bottle of Sea and Ski, and get out there and catch a few rays, you know?
So dear God, I haven't heard of Sea and Ski in eons.
Oh, yeah.
that's like the other day, I sort of advertently gave away my geezer hood when I made some sort of reference to Donald Trump having told more lies than Carter had little liver pills.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carter's little liver pills were gone by the time I was born.
Yeah, well, they were, the FTC made them rename the product. Carter's
because they did absolutely pills. Nothing for the liver.
Yeah, I think they were a laxative or something, little teeny tiny pills. I believe my Aunt Effie was a big, but she not only did she like Sol Hepatica and Cashmere Bouquet talcum powder, but I believe she was a big fan of Carter's little liver pills.
Well, she'd probably take a couple of those after one of those merry madcap nights of two-fisted hams drinking while watching the wrestling. Kill him! Kill him!
Oh, yeah,
I said
yeah,
kill him! Get hit him with the chair!
Yeah, it's in his diaper. She used to think they wore diapers, and they would put adhesive tape or something down their pants, and when the ref wasn't looking, they would rub it in the opponent's eyes. Good God, I am going so far back.
You know, you owe America a book, Scott. And just for the sake of your auntie's memories, you owe that to them, too.
Yeah, I probably
should.
The
bird, the beer, the wrestling, the cashmere bouquet.
Yeah.
At least one epic poem.
Well, you know who, I believe she wrote the book, Fried Green Tomatoes. I believe Fannie Flagg did. She used to be on game shows in the 60s and 70s.
And I think her big star turn was as a supporting actor on the second reincarnation of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. You're right. Oh, God, we're ancient.
Well, this would be, yes, tell me about it. If I ever did write a book, I don't think it would be a novel. It would just be a book that would be based on reality, but told with a broad comic brush. In other words, it could very well be true what you're reading, but not in all particulars. What form of
oh yeah, no,
is
that's
that?
that's what you're describing there is gonzo journalism.
Yeah,
that's straight out of Hunter S. Thompson.
Not as much ether.
Well, you know, that really doesn't get you out of the woods when you consider the acid, the cocaine, and the booze,
and
the weed.
Yeah, because you know that no human being could have survived the massive ingestion of substances.
Well, that's the thing, though. There are articles out there written by people who were profiling him. In fact, I saw a timeline the other day of Hunter S. Thompson's day from back before he decided to do himself in.
Yeah.
And there was weed, and there was cocaine, and there were several different forms of alcohol. Everything but the acid and the raw ether.
Yeah, but can you do that on an ongoing basis?
No, he's dead.
No, I know that, but he killed himself.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know. That's not why I call.
I mean, it's kind of like, and you know, I guess it's fashionable to hate on Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
But he's legendary for his booze consumption. But what nobody talks nearly as much about is the number of head injuries he sustained.
Yeah.
And because of the
plane crashes.
Because of the brilliance of his early writing, you can't help but maybe blame the plane crashes as much as the booze.
Yeah. And he also had a predisposition, is that the word, genetically, toward depression.
The family had issues.
Yeah, I believe one of his sons. I don't know whether it was.
His daddy. His daddy.
Yeah, but his
having spent a lifetime around his mother, Grace.
Yeah.
Grace Miller Hemingway, I think. He did himself in, and then I think his younger brother did himself in, and then one of his granddaughters did herself in, and. It's a sad thing.
Yeah, and the theme from MASH, notwithstanding, suicide is not painless. It does bring on many changes, but it is not painless. And I have flirted with it, and it's been some years ago. But there is something about it is a tantalizing thing to know that in a single moment. All of this crap can go away. Of course, there may or may not be a different form, maybe worse crap, next. Or it could be just sweet nothing, you know? But that was many years ago, and I've come to find out.
But what dreams may come, aye, there's the rub.
I just have a morbid curiosity to see what happens next, but also to prove that, to see if that palm reader above the magic shop in D.C. who told me at age 8 or 9 that I would live to be 87, I want to prove that out, you know?
Nah, prove that wrong.
Yeah, you know?
Go up to 97. And then, so that the good church ladies can say, we told him that drinking and smoking would kill him.
Yeah, yeah. I want to do as well as Aunt Emma and Aunt Effie. They both made it to like 95, 96, and they ate whatever they wanted. I mean, they cooked with lard. Did you ever somebody pull together one of Aunt Effie's pound cakes this year?
It has not happened yet. It's on my list.
But, oh, you must.
But you mentioned lard. That's the only way to make a respectable biscuit.
Oh, I know. It.
Speaking of biscuits.
Yeah. Oh no.
Food porn. We haven't had food.
You're gonna make me drool, Bob. You're gonna do it. I'm just gonna drool all over this phone.
Agnes had over the weekend.
And it ain't paid for yet.
I know. I just don't tell them about the drool and tell them it shorted out in the high humidity of the San Diego weather.
Well, anyway, go ahead. No, they won't buy humidity because we don't get it. If we get humidity of 52%, we're all running to our allergists.
Agnes had fried up some slices of smoked pork loin that I got at the store, and it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it left some pan drippings.
Ooh.
And so she heated up the skillet, and she made a strong cup of decaf with French Market chicory decaf.
Mm.
And she deglazed the skillet with that stuff. And it and brought up all of those ham deliciousnesses off the bottom of the skillet.
Notes.
Oh yes, notes. And yes. let it gently simmer until it was reduced by about half. It was still still thin. And then this was yesterday's dinner. Brought it to me with 4 piping hot biscuits.
Oh, I am drooling, Bob. I hope you know this.
And I just split those biscuits with a thumb and dunked them in that red-eye gravy.
Oh, mercy.
And Mother McCree, you want to talk about good.
Well, Aunt Effie and Aunt Emma were big believer in pan drippings and pot liquor.
Oh,
people don't know what pot liquor is.
Oh, I do.
Well, I know you do. I have heard tell
the dregs under, the dregs of a pot of cooked greens.
Yeah.
And with a little buttered cornbread. If Todd's listening, he too is drooling now.
Yes, I've heard tell of people days away from meeting their maker have been infused with an intravenous solution of pot liquor, who have miraculously recovered.
I'm willing to credit that with my belief.
There you go. See, that'll be in the book. That may be the title. Pot liquor, no. Pan drippings, pot liquor, and other fanciful tales.
Mm-mm. Pan drippings, pot liquor, and the resurrection.
There you go. I think we've got the title.
And that's only going to cost you 10% of the 10% of the proceeds.
And maybe get our friend up, cut her in, our friend up in Wisconsin, get her to do the art cover.
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
The cover art. Or art cover. I don't know. It'll be one of those.
It's time for Pan Drippings and Pot Liquor with your host, Cover Art. Art Cover. With your host, Art Cover.
It could be a podcast before it's over. People could check in with their own memories of growing up.
Welcome to Pan Drippings and Pot Liquor with Bob Kincaid. Hey, you know what? You know, Todd keeps talking about doing the outdoor show with the cooking and the grilling and the frying and the griddling, and we could call that Pan Drippings and Pot Liquor.
There you go. And see, the thing is, Bob, I bring up the great San Diego climate most of the time. To urge you to make your next road trip, maybe even live broadcast, maybe even outdoor cooking extravaganza, be here under our delightful San Diego skies during a time of year when it's just makes your nipples hard. The weather is so nice.
Hey, let's leave my nipples out of this. But and you make a compelling case for it. But right now, I know we're committed to Philadelphia. In early July, lovely time.
Now, what goes on there? Is that when
that's Netroots Nation.
Netroots, yeah.
And I'm really hoping that but we need to kind of it would be cool to see if people actually want to do come up, do the Netroots Nation thing, go to the panel discussions, go to the keynotes. It's probably going to be crawling with presidential candidates.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then we'll find some time for a little horn in somewhere along the way.
I woke up rather late today. Has anyone else declared for 2020?
No, not since yesterday when Kamala Harris rode the dead back of Martin Luther King Jr. to announce her candidacy.
Well, I just took a sip of coffee. I told you that I'm running all the Democratic candidates through my filter of how fairly did you treat Al Franken.
We should talk about this because I was pretty stern in my response to that, and I still think the Senate would be a better place if it still had Al Franken in it. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen his replacement making much in the way of noise or, offering withering cross examinations of nominees or anything like that, or witnesses.
Is there a list of the original instigators of the Let's Get Rid of Al Franken contingent?
There's seven of them. It was led by Kirsten Gillibrand. Kamala Harris jumped on. So did Mazie Hirono. Amy Klobuchar.
Amy did?
Pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh, she's.
But there was like seven of them. But before we get lost in the shuffle here, I feel a need to say something.
All right.
I mean, I'm not taking issue with you, but my final analysis on the Al Franken situation is that Al Franken is the one who is responsible for the fact that Al Franken is not in the Senate.
Well, yeah, because didn't he just up and quit?
Yeah, he did.
All right.
A hell of a lot of pressure was brought to bear on him. They made it clear that they would not invite him to join in any of their reindeer games. But ultimately, he's the one who decided to quit. I said, I think the Senate would be better off if it still had Al Franken in it. I was not, I'm not going to be 100% aligned with any politician, senator, member of Congress, president. I'm going to disagree with all of them because that's sort of human nature. Among others, Al Franken had a chance to introduce the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act in the Senate. Al Franken never did that, though we begged. But he's just like every other Democratic senator we went to and begged and pleaded in the name of the 1,000 West Virginians who die every year as a result of the toxicity of mountaintop removal. But he chose to leave. There was going to be an ethics inquiry, and he chose to leave. And what I'm saying by this is I am not going to hold that against Kirsten Gillibrand or Kamala Harris or Amy Klobuchar if she runs, or anybody else who had a hand in running him out of, in trying to run him out of the Senate, or at the very least telling him that they would not let him join in any of their reindeer games.
It was a good movie, by the way.
Yes. That decision was made by Al Franken.
But that raises a question, Bob. Two questions, two comments. All right, yes, Al quit before the process played itself out. In turn, my big complaint with the six or seven member panel who jumped the gun, in my estimation, I mean, unless they knew something dead to rights, I believe they jumped the gun because at the time, everybody was on tenterhooks in terms of Me Too. That's not to disparage the Me Too movement. That's only to say we were hypersensitive to even the faintest whiff of of bad stuff between powerful men and not powerful women. And in some cases, powerful women. All right, I get that. But they just seem to be awfully goddamn quick to paint with a very broad
brush.
Well,
there's part of the reason I'm saying what I'm saying about Al Franken is because there are other issues that should far supersede whatever Al Franken did or did not do. For instance, in the case, Hung Like Jesus says, subtitle to Scott's book, Before Grits Was Grocery. and Earther says, stop making us visualize other people's small from the cold, flabby nipples, Scott.
My nipples are so hard you could cut glass with them. Anyway,
7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, exactly halfway through the program tonight, and the horn locomotive has taken the siding into the gutter. Yes. Tracy has a message for us. Please let the Horn family know, especially Todd and Steve from Georgistan, that I went to the doctor for a follow-up, and I am now on a regimen of antibiotics, steroids, and because my doctor is old school, a big old bottle of cough syrup with codeine in it, which I'm especially happy for in times like these to help keep me numb during times like these. Fuck a teaspoon, taking a serious doctor swig straight from the bottle. Again, with a heavy, slightly tipsy sigh, your friend, Tracy.
It's now full-blown pneumonia?
No, it was. Now it just won't go away. Now it's just lingering bullshit. I want to go back to, for instance, Kirsten Gillibrand. She jumped out there and made sure that she was one of very few Democrats in the Senate, as far as I can tell, who voted against every single nominee that Julius Geiser sent for confirmation.
Any nominee for anything?
Yep.
All right.
She's been Senator No, as far as that is concerned. And so that burnishes her progressive bona fides. And she has taken a lot of questions about Al Franken, and her answers are her answers. But the one that nobody's really, really putting the pressure on her about is the fact that back when she represented an upstate New York House district, that had a lot of rural land in it and a lot of rural voters. And we all know what urban means in Dog Whistle. Well, yeah. Dog Whistle for rural is dumb white with lots of guns. Okay?
And just to give you a historical reference and side note that's relevant to Ms. Gillibrand, I wonder if her district in upstate New York, which is and was rather conservative in terms of their outlook on life, I wonder its proximity to the town in New York, upstate New York, that tried to host the singer, the black singer, the Old Man River, called a commie.
Oh, maybe Paul Robeson?
Paul Robeson, back in the 40s. And I believe Pete Seeger and the Weavers were there as entertainment. And when they tried to get out of the town, I think it was Peekskill. I don't know how far upstate that is. But their cars were stoned. And when I say stoned, I mean big fucking rocks hurled at their cars by so-called patriots because Robeson was thought to be
a commie,
a commie.
Well, hold on. I can tell you where the district is. It's roughly Albany and surrounding rural locales, all or some of Albany. That's why she announced in Troy, New York. Troy's not far from Albany. But bear with me here. The larger issue is that during the years in which she represented that district, she had
an A rating from the National Ruble Association. And boy, howdy, Scott, was she pro-gun.
Well, and
the check from the NRA cleared year in and year out, and she ballyhooed about that NRA A rating for all she was worth and went so far as to give interviews where she said, I sleep with two loaded rifles under my gun, under my bed, and I'm never going to let anybody tell me that I don't have the right to defend my family.
Yeah.
Well, no sooner does she get appointed to fill the unexpired term of Hillary Clinton when Hillary left to be Barack Obama's Secretary of State, then she has this road to Damascus moment where, NRA bad, And the cynic in me says that's because she no longer was campaigning in the limited confines of a really white, rural, upstate New York district, but had instead moved into the real world of a cosmopolitan New York, where having an NRA rating of A and cashing their checks every year and bragging about the two loaded rifles you keep under your bed were a negative and not a positive.
Yeah, and hasn't there been a rather substantial parade this early on of candidates or potential candidates on the Democratic side who are apologizing and or explaining previous things?
Previous shitty things that they've done?
Yeah, I mean, see, that sends a message to me of, well, they were playing politics back then or didn't actually or don't actually believe what they proclaim now. They are immediately suspect in my book.
And well, all politics are local, Scott. And well, so you have to politic on what is the best sale to your potential pool of voting constituents. And look, let's be honest, Kamala Harris has some of the same baggage. Guess who else guess who else has baggage before somebody says, yeah, you just don't want women candidates. Bullshit. No. You know who else has baggage? Joe Biden has steamer trunks of baggage. His fawning obeisance to the credit card industry and the so-called bankruptcy reform that fucked people out of ordinary working people out of being able to bankrupt away their credit card debt, which was unsecured debt from jump. And there were a lot of Democrats that were in on that too. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, Scott.
Well, I got my eyes opened about Biden about 3 years ago. There was a book, and I cannot remember the title or the author, but it was a look at the remember 10 years ago, the big brouhaha in the housing market and the economy and politics, and just the shit really hit the fan in 2007, 2008. You remember that. Well, somebody wrote a book out of that. But instead of talking about the people who suffered, just specifically the people who suffered from the debacle, the financial debacle of 2008, his book was divided into chapters, and each chapter was devoted to someone who had something to do with the climate that brought that mess about. And one of the people in the book who had his own chapter was a high-up assistant to Biden who didn't have a lot of good to say about him in some respects, because he called it as it was. In other words, the opportunism and the flexible stances and morality, depending on who he was talking to or who he had to get campaign funds from. When I find that, I'm sure Amazon has a record of the book because that's where I ordered it. I'll look it up when we're not talking and send it to you. it's worthwhile reading about that mess that we've all but forgotten about hardly 10 years later. Not all of us have forgotten. Obviously, there are people still suffering as a result of that mess. But boy, didn't they wiggle their way out of that.
No. Without a doubt. Our buddy, the angry architect up over down under in Australia, says, so what you're saying is that NRA politicians on the take are full of shit? Say it ain't so, Bob. Well, it is, but I think we can even finesse that a little bit insofar as what we're talking about is a sort of transactional politics that is beyond cynical. Because the NRA had make or break power over elections. And the amount that they spent, for instance, in 2016 and before was monumental. Oddly enough, what they were able to spend in these 2018 midterms was significantly less. Because they'd caught. And they had finally been hurt, really hurt, by the combination of two things. One, the fact that they got stone cold busted and had to go to ground for being a conduit for illegal foreign contributions to political campaigns, to wit, Mother Russia. And two, they were dealt a gut punch by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School kids. And the March for Our Lives. And no matter how they tried, they wrong-footed it. They couldn't come up with a response to these kids without winding up slurring them for having the temerity to not want to be murdered in school.
Yeah.
By someone who had legally bought a firearm because of the hammer and tongs efforts made by the NRA to make sure that school shooters had ready access to firearms. It's like those kids in upstate New York that I was talking about at the beginning of the program. 23 rifles and shotguns were found when the police went to investigate these four assholes. And lo and behold, they were all legally purchased. So had they been able to pull off their attempt their plan to slaughter the innocent human beings of Islamburg, New York, they would have done so with firearms that were legally obtained because the NRA, at least in part because the NRA, helped to make it easier to get a fucking gun than it is to get a fishing license.
Yeah.
And so I'd really like to see Kirsten Gillibrand pinned on her fawning obeisance to the NRA and her sudden road to Damascus change. Because, well, politicians do that. I want to hear how well she talks her way out of it.
Well, I just, and I've said this before in the wake of 2018 and in the ensuing months, I'm not getting overly focused on 2020 because we've already got stuff on our to-do list that takes precedence in the here and the now. There's plenty of time to figure out what's happening in 2020, you know, at least a year before it really gets to where you're focusing on it. And really, it's only us and the other side who are focusing on it early on, or, you know, generally speaking. The people who actually go out and vote, and I wish more people would, some of them don't make up their mind until they march into the voting booth, you know? It's our little cottage industry in a way. You know, I talk about going to church on Sunday, and for me, church is Meet the Press, Face the Nation, CBS Sunday Morning, and whatever C-SPAN has to offer. By the way, before I forget, and we're all over the place conversationally today, and that's good, but I've got a couple of TV viewing tips for the folks in the Horn family, and I know Steve loves them and some others do as well. But here they are. Go to the C-SPAN schedule for, was it Saturday or Sunday? It must have been Sunday on C-SPAN 3. There's like three columns. It's a, like a PDF version of their daily schedule. It gives you the day and the date at the top. And then there are three columns, C-SPAN 1, C-SPAN 2, C-SPAN 3. And you can click the links and watch whatever the programming is on an on-demand type of basis. They, the other day, they aired, to coincide with January 20th, 50 years ago, Richard Nixon's first inaugural, like 90 minutes of it.
Oh, Jesus.
As seen on CBS, anchored by the late Walter Cronkite and Roger Mudd, who is still upright and above ground, although he's quite elderly. And an aside tip, if you want to read an interesting book, a few years ago, he wrote a book, Roger Mudd did, called like The Place to Be. And it's about his years as a CBS correspondent based in D.C. For the young ones out there, it'll give you an idea of how television news was done back when we had responsible, respectable television news. Roger Mudd, The Place to Be. But anyway, on C-SPAN, look for the CBS Nixon inauguration, January 20th, 1969. I was particularly struck, and they don't show the whole thing. It's only like 90 minutes of it. I was particularly struck at how many people's names I knew, people I recognized, who were running things back in the day, which proves what you said earlier. I'm old. You're old. We're all getting older. But anyway, and I remember where I was on that day. I didn't watch it on TV. I'd gone with my mom to the grocery store, the Safeway grocery store, not far from where we lived. And I sat in the car while she went into the store to get whatever it was she needed to get and listened on the radio of his inaugural address. And I all but wept January 20th, 1969, because I saw this guy coming. And I knew that Richard Milhouse Nixon was bad news for this country and for the world. And in 1968, America blew it. Although Hubert Humphrey was no great shakes, and George Wallace, by God, was certainly no great shakes, Humphrey, at least, was marginally better in many ways than Nixon was. And one wonders how life might have unfolded differently had America decided. And that was a very narrow, that was the narrowest victory on the part of a candidate in 68 since Kennedy Nixon in 1960, I believe. I'm pretty sure I know that to be true. But anyway, the two things that struck me, first was the irony of all the preachers from all the denominations right before the swearing in who gave their invocation type blessings. You had Protestant minister. You had a rabbi who had been a rabbi since 1915, for Christ's sake. You had Billy Graham, the Right Reverend Dr. Graham Crackup, okay, up there. And then for the benediction, you had a Catholic bishop and a Greek Orthodox. I mean, they covered all their theological bases. But to a person, the irony was just as thick as you please that all of their religious mutterings were talking about how great America was and how lucky we were to have Richard Milhouse Nixon at the helm. And God, you know, look over him, watch over him, guide him and lead him, give him love in his heart for his country, give him the wisdom to do the right thing. And I'm sitting here with each succeeding one saying bullshit, horseshit, pig shit, human shit, dog shit, cat shit, bird shit. I mean, the irony was incredible. And then the speech itself, the inaugural address, I will say this, it was more uplifting than Trump's a couple of years ago. But you wouldn't have to go too far out of your way. Hell, they could wheel me up there and I would give something more uplifting than Trump. Okay? But Nixon did.
American carnage. We all bleed.
And I don't mean to bogart the program. But anyway, that's viewing tip number one. You want a history lesson? Watch on C-SPAN, instant access, Nixon's 69. Well, not his 69. That's
Nixon's, don't go there.
Yes. Why did he see Deep Throat three times? He wanted to get it down pat. Anyway, watch that.
Oh, wait a minute. Thing. Wait a minute. I know it's an old one, but that's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. The other one is on PBS Tonight. Where the hell is the link? I saved the link because I wanted to bring it up to you today.
It's the coal dust one, isn't it?
The coal dust one, yeah. On CBS, it's Frontline.
No,
it's
PBS.
The coal dust.
PBS, not CBS.
PBS. No, you're right. It's PBS. P like Papa. Papa Bravo Sierra. Frontline, I believe it is. Or Nova. No, it's Frontline. PBS Tonight. Check your local listings. The coal dust.
And last night there was a rock and roll documentary that was just awesome.
Rumble.
Yeah.
Oh God, that was good. Oh, that was incredibly good.
Hey, by the way, Ron and Raleigh just sent you a note. Old, you say? If Scott thinks he's so old, ask him if he remembers who the CBS anchor was before Uncle Walter.
Oh, Douglas Edwards.
Yep.
And you know, remember Don Hewitt, the guy who invented 60 Minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Before he did the 60 Minutes, he was the original director slash producer slash creator, more or less, of the CBS Evening News, originally with Douglas Edwards. Well, one of the problems, and you got it, this is going back to like 1948. One of the problems back then was the technology was brand new in terms of television, and Don Hewitt was bugged because Doug Edwards would have to look down to his script and kind of read ahead a little bit, and then he would look into the camera. And it was looking this up, down, was driving Hewitt crazy.
Is that how they invented the teleprompter?
No, he wanted Douglas Edwards to learn Braille so that he could
read. Oh, my
God,
that's not a joke, is it?
Yes, honest to God, that's honestly true. And Edwards had the sense to say, "No, I don't think so."
Okay, you want a 3 or 4 degrees of kind of situation.
Yeah,
so,
sure, I love it.
Douglas Edwards, yes. And years and years and years later, lo and behold, I would become the youngest person ever to deliver a radio news worldwide broadcast while I was at CNN, and when everything was over and done with and I went home, I would spend a couple of hours throwing darts at a little pub across the street. And one of the guys that I threw darts with was Douglas Edwards' nephew.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, apropos of absolutely nothing, but yeah. You reminded me of that because I hadn't heard Douglas Edwards' name in eons.
Well, I was lucky to have come.
And see, when he got bumped by Walter Cronkite, they shifted him to like doing the noon news.
Yeah, the updates in the middle of the day.
Right. Exactly.
Those little 5-minute news capsules, which he did. A lot of people like that. You know, I believe it was right after The Price Is Right, the 1-hour Price Is Right.
And the other thing from back in the day, since we're talking about media. If some network broke in with this is a fill in the network blank special report.
No, they were bulletins back then.
Well, no, I mean, I remember this is a CBS News special report. This is an ABC News special report. You knew that some shit had seriously happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they were not going to break in on advertiser paid time with some, you know, some pissant news story, some nothing burger. Now the words breaking news are used for we're back from a commercial.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they've cheapened, diluted. See, it's all part of that cry wolf bullshit that Trump is so good at. Everything that that man tweets or says is some horrendous crisis. So that when a horrendous crisis actually occurs, I mean, one that is of great consequence, who's going to believe it?
It's the boy who cried wolf. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
While I'm thinking about it also, and I always have too much on my plate, but it's usually good stuff, I would like to think. The movie being there, along with the movie Network, as you mentioned on my behalf earlier, if you have a chance, people, and have never seen them or haven't seen them in a while, watch both of them. Because they are pathetic. I wasn't kidding when I said that. Network at the time, 76, the Sidney Lumet movie starring Peter Finch and William Holden and Faye Dunaway and Ned Beatty. Jesus, what a performance. And Beatrice Straight, who played William Holden's wife.
Oh, no, the whole thing. I mean, you know, Patty Chayefsky wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
It. And the machinations behind the scenes when Peter Finch's character begins to take off.
Yeah, Howard Beale.
Yeah, when Howard Beale begins to take off with his outrage, the way they work to capitalize and make a fast buck off of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I remain convinced to this day that is where Rupert Murdoch got the inspiration for Fox News generally and Bill O'Reilly in particular.
Yeah, and another good book from a few years ago was the last name was Sherman, I think. Wrote a book, a biography of Roger Ailes. There's another name. Speaking of Nixon, your degrees of separation. Roger Ailes was Nixon's TV man.
Oh, yeah.
In 68. He was the one.
And he would go on to hire Mr. Stress, beloved of this program. To do a jingle for him.
No.
Yes.
Oh dear.
I mean, that's documented in the archives somewhere.
Wow.
And Bill talked about what a shit heel he was.
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of the book. Gabriel Sherman is the author. If you Google Gabriel Sherman and Roger Ailes, you'll get the title of the book. Well worth your time if you're interested in... Somebody
should find Roger Ailes' grave and tombstone, and slip in with a cold chisel, and I'm assuming it's made of stone, and chisel as his epitaph, his last great comment. I sure hope you're not wearing panties.
Oh God!
When they were having some sort of party at somebody's estate, and there was a trampoline, and one of the Fox women was jumping on it, and he said, "I sure hope you're not wearing panties."
Jesus. Well, getting back to Network, and don't let me lose the thread again. Jesus, Network at the time was a black comedy that no one, in their wild, with the best asset on earth, in 1976, there was no way you could. A mistake Network for a documentary in terms of how television news was done. It was prophetic in that regard. And not too many years later, we began to see what they used to call, and this was a big ABC thing, happy news.
Mm-hmm. And happy talk.
Happy news. Happy talk. And it just degenerated quickly. And Roger Ailes, as far back as the mid-60s, wanted there to be a right-wing answer, network-wise, to the so-called liberal bias of the establishment media.
Right, otherwise known as the factuality.
Yeah, they reality-based media, okay? So watch Network if you get a chance, and also watch Being There. You quoted Louise, the maid, the housekeeper, her line. She was brilliantly played by a woman named Ruth Attaway. And you didn't give all of the quote. Louise talking to other poor black seniors in the lobby of a residential hotel. This is after she has to move out of the house. For sure, it's a white man's world in America. Look here, I raised that boy since he was the size of a piss ant. And I'll say right now, he never learned to read nor write. No, sir. He had no brains at all, was stuffed with rice pudding between the ears, shortchanged by the Lord and dumb as a jackass. Look at him now. Yes, sir, all you gotta be is white in America to get what you want. Gobbledygook. If that doesn't describe Donald John Trump...
To an effing T.
I'll blow you at a and
you know, but there are...
And
there's
an hour to get a crowd.
There them. Is... let me see if I can find the other clip. Because there's another very Trumpian moment. Where he meets a couple of gay guys.
Oh, at the party.
At the party, and all he's trying to do is find a TV. And he says, I like to watch. Do you? And then, of course, with the theme is repeated with Shirley MacLaine again.
They're at the party for the Russian ambassador, played by Richard Basehart.
Yes,
who was on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yes,
and Chauncey Gardner by this time is mingling in the crowd, and this fellow sidles up to him. Some staffer in some government office, because it's at in D.C. It's at the ambassador's residence.
And it's that time of year.
And he says, how is it I never met you, Mr. Gardner? And Mr. Gardner's not interested in small talk. Chauncey wants to find a TV because he likes to watch. And he says it to the fellow. And the fellow says, wait right here. I'll go get Warren.
That's it. And then with Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, yes.
I don't know what you like.
After he's pretty much rebuffed her sexual advances because, well, he really doesn't know what sex is. But yeah. She doesn't know that. She thinks he's a conservative genius.
Yes.
Yeah, here we go.
I don't know what you like.
I like to watch, Eve.
What do you mean, you like to watch?
I like to watch.
And we have a president now. Who, if the story of the pee-pee tape is to be believed, Scott?
He likes to watch.
Likes to watch.
Yeah. And it not just in regard to that, but his executive time, one of the people blocks out 2 or 3 hours in the morning. I guess this is while he gets his hair arranged, his single hair, by the way, as you've so wisely noted.
Right, it's 300 feet long.
Yeah.
One hand.
Yes, and while that's happening, he watches the shows, predominantly Fox News.
But the idea of him just shambling out of a policy meeting about giving away trillions of dollars to rich people, which you would think matters to him, but instead he just shuffles out of the room and goes wandering down and you know, the fact that you can hear, click, this is Fox, fair and balanced. And then Mike Pencilneck Geek
has to go and retrieve him. Excuse me, the boss has gone to watch TV. I'll be right back. I'll bring him right, I promise. In the name of Jesus, I'll bring him right back. And then the fact that the guy says, this happened several times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a couple of days late with this. I put this on my Facebook on Sunday the 20th, and I'll share it with the group as soon as I find it. It starts with a graphic at the top of the Facebook post, and I'm almost there.
We got a note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Don't forget, Joe Biden has an uncanny ability to stick his foot in his mouth. I'm not looking forward to squirming and cringing my way through a Biden presidential campaign. I'm stressed out enough as it is. Interestingly, it seems Biden's penchant for verbal flub-dubs are suddenly going down the memory hole, just as Hillary Clinton's unelectability was temporarily forgotten at the height of her popularity as Secretary of State. It's all a pretext, because that's exactly how the GOP wants it. All the old GOP-inspired faux scandals and hatreds against Hillary suddenly reappeared during the presidential campaign. Yeah, you know, those goddamned emails, Whitewater, Monica, and if they had a two-foot-thick attack plan on Bernie Sanders, then they have or are working on a similar attack playbook for Biden, who's an easy target. The ammunition will most certainly be resurrected from the memory hole. P.S., great joke on Deep Throat, Scott, and a laugh emoji. And by the way, going expand on what Darlene said about they're going to be resurrected, that has already been announced as a thing that's going to happen. Newly minted Senate Judiciary Chair Lindsey Graham reached for comment under the fainting couch down at the ancestral estate of Smoldering Chode. we are going to re-examine Hillary's emails and all these things that were insufficiently investigated. And we're going to get to the bottom of it this time, to which Dick Durbin added, well, why don't we just throw in Benghazi and be done?
Jeez.
But he's really, really going to do that, because the people who have, I presume, his nuts in a vice have told him to. Because it worked great in 2016. It'll work good. It'll work good here too. By the way, you've got a recommendation coming from Steve from Georgistan. One for Scott. HBO documentary called Bleed Out. It's about the cost of medical error in both coin and human suffering.
I will watch it.
That sounds like one where you fire up the blender and get the margaritas going.
Well, you talk about, you know, the game plan against Biden, should he be the Democratic nominee, digging up the moldy oldies, rusty dusties, golden goodies from the Joe Biden lexicon. Look for these two words, Neil Kinnock, who, as I recall, was a British politician. And apparently, was it 88 that Biden had an abbreviated run, or was it 84?
You know, great minds think alike, because Steve in New York just emailed and said, can't forget Uncle Joe's penchant for plagiarism, a la Neil Kinnock.
Yep, there you go.
But he's kind of inoculated against that, I suppose, by virtue of the fact that at least two or three times now, melanoma has plagiarized Michelle almost to the point of declaring, I was born a poor black child on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah, but what's that acronym that you use when the Republicans do
it? Oh, you mean IOKIYAR? It's okay if you're a Republican?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter when they do it. Okay, I found the Facebook thing from Sunday, the 20th of January, a date that, well, may live in infamy, but that's been done to death. It may be resonant for some people. The graphic, a picture of Trump with white clown, little hat on his head, big red nose. Elect a clown, expect a circus. And my thoughts on January 20th, 2019, it marks the midway point of Trump's term in office. It's no exaggeration to say he has a severe I problem, letter I problem. He is inept, he is incompetent, an imbecile, and utterly irrational. He is clearly trapped in a hamster wheel of ego.
Of his own making.
Yeah. The past 2 years have been a nonstop gala.
You know, there's a certain poetic rhythm to
disasters.
There's a certain poetic rhythm to saying he's on a hamster wheel of his own design.
Yeah.
He's on a hamster wheel of his own design, living inside the greatness of his teeny tiny spirochete mind.
There you go.
Singing. But see, we're at $551 to go, and if we can take it down at least, you know, a couple of $100, I won't sing anymore, okay? And
well,
that's 50 whole minutes of not singing.
Just to hit that last line in the post, the past 2 years have been a nonstop gala of spectacular disasters. If that doesn't sum it up, and his people don't get it, his fans, his minions.
They don't have to. They don't want to.
Oh, no. There's no point in it. There's nothing to get in their estimation.
He's like Mark Greit again.
But definitely, you know, watch Being There and watch Network. If you've never seen them, and I can't believe our audience, this Horn audience, has never seen. Although I went a long time before I saw The Big Lebowski, so you never know. But if you've never seen them or haven't watched them in a while, I think they're both on Amazon Prime or Netflix. You can find them. They're out there. Being There and Network. And superimpose what you see over today in terms of TV and in terms of Trump. And a bell will go off in your head. And then you'll weep copious tears. But make me a list, Bob, of the initial people who jumped out. We didn't finish talking about Franken. The initial people who jumped up.
Gillibrand, Kamala Harris. Can't leave out Rich Ojeda. I mean, there's nothing like getting your ass handed to you by 13 points in a single congressional district that says presidential timber quite like that.
Isn't that fellow in West Virginia?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Let's see, who else? Is Julian Castro, is he officially announced?
I can't keep him straight.
I'm treating Elizabeth Warren as having announced.
Yeah, but was she on the bandwagon initially? I would like to think that Elizabeth Warren had better sense.
Oh, you mean the seven? It's the seven who went after Franken. It's at this point Kamala Harris and Kirsten Gillibrand.
Okay.
And let me be clear here, lest I get hate mail. If either one of those are my party's nominee, I'm going to vote for them. I'm damn sure not going to vote for Jill fucking Stein. And I'm not gonna vote for Julius Geezer, and I'm goddamn sure not gonna stay home.
And wait a minute, you forgot a Republican contender in 2020, possibly, quite realistically.
Oh, who, John Kasich?
Yeah, he'll be in the mix. But I was thinking more along the lines of Mitt Whitehorse Romney.
Oh, I don't know. I think the White Horse has been gelded.
I don't know. I've seen Republicans come and go, and some of them are very tenacious. I mean, Christ, go over the last 30 years and make a list of all the Republican nominees over the last 30, 40 years for president, and all, not nominees, but wannabes. Because there's a distinction. Early on, there's lots of wannabes, but there's only one nominee, okay? And Democrats, too. Look at the list. Check it twice for the last 40 years of people, wannabes, who have wanted to attain the highest executive office in the land. And on the Republican side, definitely, you will see names cropping up more frequently than Harold Stassen's did.
Yeah.
There's another name from the past.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Hey, Scott, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
I will, Bob. And
if we ever if we get a working oven again, way up on the list is Aunt Effie's pound cake.
Oh yes, definitely, definitely. I'm surprised one of the Horn people that you didn't send it to them and have them send you a cake. Oh, my niece. She's not statistically a niece. Bloodline niece. She is the daughter of my older brother's second wife, but she's going to be coming here to San Diego, I think, in February. We've never met. The only relative, quote unquote, that I've never actually met, you know, immediate type relative. A couple of years ago for Christmas, I had posted the recipe for Aunt Effie's pound cake online, and she saw it. And a couple of years ago for Christmas, she sent me a nice card and a box of homemade cookies and things. And down at the bottom, wrapped in saran wrap, was a 3-inch slice of Aunt Effie's pound cake.
Whoa.
And I nibbled on it. I wanted to wolf it all down with a big ice-cold glass of ice-cold, full, whole, give your heart an attack.
Which reminds me, and someone has very patiently stayed on hold for a long time, and I want to make sure that they don't run away on me.
Yeah.
But I imagine you probably got it out there. I can get it at my Kroger's. There is a brand of milk, and I don't know what evil thing they're doing to it, but it's the best damned whole milk I have ever consumed in all my life.
Honest to God, whole milk?
Well, I mean, not whole milk, but, you know, 4% milk.
Well, I must try that. What is, you don't know who makes it?
Yeah, no, it's called Fairlife.
Fairlife.
And among other things, we get it because Ferg has some lactose issues, and so does Margie. They can drink it without a problem. And it's also got boosted protein. But it's richer and creamier than any other plain old, you know, red lid milk that I've ever had, ever.
I have not had whole milk, you know.
And if you're channeling your inner 5-year-old, their chocolate milk is fucking awesome.
Now I might try that, but just in terms of milk, I can't remember the last time I had a glass of whole milk, or even a glass of 2%. I just use it for coffee and occasionally cereal. But I'll give it a try. Was it Fair?
Fairlife.
Fairlife, okay.
And it's magnificent. And when warm weather gets here, there will be homemade ice cream made with that stuff.
Oh, I'll bet you that would be good, too.
Agnes and I were just talking the other day. There's two things going to happen. When the blackberries come in, we're going to put on the long pants that are, you know, thorn resistant, and some heavy boots to withstand any resident copperheads, and wade into the blackberry bramble and collect blackberries for two purposes. One, there will be a 1/4 quart jar of blackberries in 2-quart jars, and vodka over one and brandy over the other one, and left sit.
Mercy.
And the other will... The other will be to make blackberry ice cream.
Oh. I did not get custody of the ice cream maker from my first ex-wife.
Oh, there's so many great makers out there now. So much better than there used to be.
We had the one. It wasn't very big. You put part of it in the freezer, and it's got this stuff in it.
Yeah, the bowl. Freezes. Right.
Yes. And you put that into the larger plastic shell.
Well, now for slightly more money, they've got like a 5-quart machine. Cuisinart does one.
Well,
and
I'm
you
tired
just plug
of...
it into the wall. Nothing goes in the freezer. It's its own little freezer unit. And you put the stuff in, plug it in, turn it on, walk away.
I will check it out because ever since I moved to this new place in mid-July of 2017, I found out that the local 7-Eleven has Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. Very high price, though, compared to the stores, the grocery stores. I'm going to start making coffee ice cream. I'm going to get one of these devices. As good as Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream is.
Well, no, if you get one of those devices and make your own ice cream, you will be able to proudly say, I am not consuming any guar gum or locust bean gum or carrageenan or stabilizers.
Say it. I can't spell it. I can't even say it.
Right.
Anyway,
yeah.
Go ahead, Bob. Let the caller's patience be
all rewarded. Right. You take care, Scott. Have a lovely evening.
I will. You too.
Later now. And by the way, Jack in Shreveport tells me the Fairlife fat-free works real well in coffee, makes it turn the right color. That matters. No, I didn't know it. They're doing something right, though, because Brother Deacon Asa tells me, did you know that Fairlife is freaking Coca-Cola? They're pushing it out here, too. Well, whatever they're doing to it, and I'm sure it's something evil, it's fan-freaking-tastic. I mean, I got the stuff on a lark, and it was... I mean, it was like the milk that used to come in a glass bottle that the milkman would set down at your door. It's that rich, that creamy, that good. They're doing something right. Again, going back to the phone, but I got to extend thanks. We have a show on me. Courtesy of our buddy of long standing, Harold. The president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. So that actually took us down to only $351 to finish the evening, and lo and behold, $751 to finish the month of January. So that is profound, and I cannot extend thanks high enough. Thank you, Harold. Thank you immensely. Just a couple of notes before going back to the phone. Our buddy, the Angry Architect, had a sincere follow-up question. If corruption in all places, high and low, is so deep, how the hell would you get out of this? Seems like you just couldn't get rid of it. It's everywhere, and it seems like it's just getting worse worldwide, not just with you guys. Well, you're right. You're right, because what we're seeing is... One of the occasional expansions of fascism, and fascism goes hand in hand with political corruption. So I'd say you have to be cognizant of it. You know, it's step one of the 12-step program. We realized that fascism was ruining our world, but then you have to kind of walk away from the notion of being powerless over it. We're not powerless, but we have to recognize it for what it is. And then once you have hard proof, and we're getting closer and closer to it, for instance, of the fact that so many Republicans are corrupted by NRA money that was funneled through the NRA from Russia, well, then you run the bastards out on a rail. In a country... as attenuated politically as this country is, where you have to run them out on an individual basis, there's no doubt about the fact that that's a tall chore. But you have to get them out of government, and then you have to pass laws to make it impossible for them to ever, 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 ever do it again. See, at the end of World War II, when we had beaten global fascism, we thought, well, yeah, we'll never do that. And so we didn't really worry about it, and here we are. So it's not much of an answer, Angry, but it is an answer. It's a step forward. So take that and run with it. And like I've said before, at least here in this country, dare to dream. Don't talk about getting a 51-49 vote majority in the Senate. Talk about running Mitch McConnell out. And by the way, there are billboards in Kentucky now. Talk about running John Cornhole out. Talk about defeating the Republican senators in Louisiana, in Mississippi, in Alabama, in Georgia. Go for all of it. Contest them all. So there's that. By the way, Fairlife now owes us a check. Michael and Madison, subject line, Fairlife. I can testify, Fairlife is the bomb. I get mine at Target or my local grocery store. Can we get that Fairlife money check now, please? I realize this isn't traditional advertising. I believe over on Instagram the term for what we are is influencers. Oh, yes. Yes, Michael. We've been down that road. And I believe they get them money checks. I believe they get them money checks. Hey, well, you know, if only we had a staff, right? Right, Michael? All right. Tremendous pay. Again, we got 351 to finish the evening. And tremendous thanks to Harold of and Sochtris. And thank you for being ever so patient over on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia again.
Hey, Reggie. What's up?
And it's cold over here, too, in Georgia. It's windy. It's blowing. It's cold. What do you think about Fox News, quote-unquote, accidentally posting up something about Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Well, I think it was a Freudian slip, and I think it was wishful thinking. And like I said last night, I think it's a matter of they were trying to get a rise out of Donald Trump, thinking, if he's watching, he'll be so excited and happy.
Yeah, but don't you know how many psychotic people read nuts while watching this stuff and listening to it on the radio too, and on AM FM Hate Talk Radio too?
Oh, how sure.
Many, nuts out there who take this stuff seriously.
Oh, and try to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy? Yeah, there's a reason to worry.
Yeah, and that's why we have to stop these nuts from even thinking about, let alone actually acting on it. The woman's what, in her 80s?
Yes.
You know,
late 80s, I do believe. Anyway.
Yeah, but she's going to let her die naturally, you know, like she's supposed to. You know what I mean? Not murder, you know, by these nuts. And, what do you think about Ivanka Trump's dealing with that?
Isn't that just some shit?
Yeah. I called up another radio talk show before yours today, and it's unethical, and yes, it's illegal. I mean, it's illegal. What do you think? You think he'd be prosecuted and in prison for it, Bob?
No, not that.
Why do you say that?
She's just doing business. She's just doing business. And if she's not going to get busted for all the other Chinese skullduggery in which she's engaged, she's not going to be busted for this.
What, because her dear old daddy would bail her out?
No, because right? it's kind of a tough case to make.
It is, but look at what is happening all over the world. I mean, you know, she's doing all this, and if somebody else did it on our side, guess what would happen? And you say there'd be a fucking field day of the media obsessing over it, you know, jumping on and dogpiling on it. They'd be attacked left and right if somebody from our side did that, right, Bob? Or am I crazy once again? Or am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I don't think you're crazy or wrong. There would be a hue and cry. I mean, look at the hissy they had of Uranium One.
Right. Well,
to go real old school, just Whitewater, Reggie, just Whitewater.
That was in the 90s, early 90s, right?
Yeah, look at the conniption they had. It was a failed land deal. Or I'm so old I can remember when, my friends, how is it that a woman who was just a lawyer in Arkansas can have such a stellar track record with her investments? What kind of corruption is Hillary Clinton involved in that she can make futures bets on milk or cattle or something, whatever the hell it was? Because, you know, the oxymoron had a baby week after night, day after day, week after week, month after. Well, obviously, she's getting insider information.
Right. And these diddleheads, who are his loyal followers, or should I say subjects, listen to them every day for 30 years and believe all that. They get their news from him and Fox News, correct? Or am I just, you know, opining here, you know? Or am I just talking out of my, you know, I'm just talking out of pocket. Am I opining here that they get their news from I mean, the information from him and Fox News Channel. No, nowhere else.
Well, I mean, look at the Covington Catholic story.
Yeah, right.
Now, here are these rotten ass kids, but mommy and daddy just happen to know how to reach out to a notorious right wing PR hack shop that
Who's
just
that?
Happens to be run by a protege of Karl Rove. And they just happened to write a 3-page statement on behalf of that rotten little shitbird who was the center of the controversy. And so then you've got members of the for-profit media saying, oh, my, I jumped to a conclusion. And now Savannah Guthrie over at NBC is sitting down with the poor little bedraggled boy at the center of all this controversy. Oh, the poor misunderstood little pumpkin.
Right.
Meanwhile, photographs and video have emerged of basketball games because, you know, it's Covington, right. Kentucky, and I don't know how much you know about Kentucky, but Kentucky, the entire Commonwealth, is absolutely crazy over basketball. They're kind of meh over football, but over basketball, they freaking lose it. I mean, Kentucky, North Carolina, just bad. I mean, these are classic basketball states. And so basketball is big at the Covington Catholic,
right?
And by the way, they are the Colonels, and their mascot is done up in blue, but he looks like a Confederate cavalry officer,
right?
But their colors are blue and black.
Blue and black, representing what mascot exactly?
Well, the Colonels.
Oh, the Colonels.
Here's the thing. So over the years, when they play high schools that have predominantly African American players, they declare a blackout, and everybody wears black to the game, and there's no big deal. That's no big deal. Blackouts and whiteouts are done. I mean, if you've ever seen a home game at Penn State when they declare a whiteout and everybody wears white to the stadium, it's kind of a stunning spectacle. Well, this, they do the opposite. It's all black. And it's okay, so fine. Other schools do that too. But you know what other schools don't do that they do at Covington Catholic, Reggie?
What is that exactly, Bob?
They don't paint up in blackface.
Right. Because that's racism and illegal, I believe, and discriminatory.
Well, it's not illegal, but it's damn sure racism. And there's no argument. You know, we've been down this road too many times. There is no argument to be made in which it's okay for anybody to put on blackface.
Right.
But there are several different photos of them. And in particular, there's one where there's a young African-American young man who's inbounding the ball, and he plays for Clark County High School.
Right.
And all of these privileged little white kids, including one who is not just black face, but painted black all the way down to his waist, are shrieking at him as he inbounds the ball. And then, just to add one more thing into the mix, I mentioned talking with Carol Baker last night that there's no percentage in watching all 2 hours of that video because it doesn't exonerate these rotten little shit weasels.
Right.
But right before airtime, Reggie, I saw another video of some of these Covington Catholic kids, and they're all hanging out. Looks like somewhere down on the mall, and somebody took a little video of them shrieking MAGA at a woman for having the temerity to walk past them. Howling and catcalling her.
Right. Like you said, these little white privileged little dipshits have never been truly and thoroughly disciplined as we were. And if you and I did something like that way back in our days, Bob, guess what would have happened to us both?
Oh, my little white ass would have been beat.
Yeah. That old-time religion in the form of a belt or a switch, right?
Reggie, there ain't nothing worse than having to go pick your own switch.
Right. You would have had to do that, and me too, if we did that way back in the day. But we weren't that stupid. right?
Well, I mean, my situation is a little bit it's not different or unique, but I lived in a neighborhood that started out lily white and right. eventually transitioned into it is now an entirely black neighborhood.
Right.
Down in Alabama. But right. I walk to school every day with black right. and white kids, and I more often got the shit kicked out of me by the other white kids or wound up having right. to brawl or run for my life from white kids than I ever got from any of the black kids.
Right.
And we played together in the backyards and stuff under the baleful, disapproving glare of some of our other neighbors.
Right.
But, right. you know, but, my family came from up here, and they brought their values with them. And my right. my dad had been down in the coal mines where you're not down there for much more than an hour, and everybody down there is a black man.
Right.
And you can't tell black from white when they come up at the end of the shift.
Right, right. And but Nicole Fallon on her show said something about Savannah Guthrie, too, that she sold out a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's when Nicole Fallon, yeah, she sold out a long time ago. And then you got people like Dana Lush defending these white kids, you know what I mean? On her radio show, defending these white kids.
Oh, well, you know what I think of her.
Oh, she's an idiot. She's an idiot. And so are those kids that did this. Do you think they should have been disciplined, Bob? You know,
I'm hoping they still will be. But if I was to have to lay money on it, I'd say the odds are long against. Because
right.
initially, the school, having seen the video, said, "Well, you know, these kids could face everything up to and including expulsion."
Right.
Which would a little time in public school. And this is not to say public school is bad. I'm just saying looking back, I had a fantastic public school experience. I'm nothing. Right. Okay. I spent 2 years in a private school, a private right. college in Missouri, but the rest of it is strictly public institutions from elementary right. school to junior high to high school, college and law school.
Right. And you had your fun and experiences there. You were taught well. Very well, I imagine. You had your fun experiences there.
And believe me, when break time came and we all snuck around behind the field house, wasn't anybody checking what color the hand was that was passing that doobie.
Right. So y'all were smoking weed in the back.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hopefully not getting caught.
Oh, no, because somebody would, you know, okay, good. And stand lookout, you right. know, around the corner. And if you saw a coach coming, it was like, ditch it. And all of a sudden, everybody'd be doing push-ups out by the field house.
Right.
You know, granted, it smelled like they were doing push-ups in a Colombian sauna, but, you know, doing push-ups.
Right. So what do you think about these pro-black Israelites that were just, I don't know, minding their own business?
They were doing a little less than minding their own business. On the video, there's taunting going back and forth, and the Hoteps have long been identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center, who is a pretty good clearinghouse for this sort of thing, as a hate group. And look, those folks are no more Israelites than the golden plates that the Mormons claim the Book of Mormon was written on was written in so-called reformed Egyptian. It's just made-up shit.
Right.
And there's a long, Reggie, I don't know if you know this, but there's a long tradition in this country of trying to deny the Jewishness of the Jewish people.
Right.
When folks began to move into this area, for instance, in the area of the great rivers of the great rivers of the Trans-Allegheny, they started noticing these earthen pyramids. And I'm a lay student of Native American culture, and I have great reverence for it and fascination with it.
Right.
And so, lo and behold, when white folks start seeing those earthen pyramids that they called mounds, You know what the first thing came to their mind was, Reggie?
What exactly, Bob?
Well, exactly. They didn't think, my God, these are magnificent constructions. I bet the Indians that we know here are the descendants of the people who made these. No, they ran right past that. So they denied the genius of indigenous peoples here, and they said, obviously, these were constructed by the lost tribes of Israel.
Right. And you got people in the media defending these poor white privileged, school kids, and these poor white privileged Christians. You know what I'm saying, Bob? Like you said, Savannah Guthrie is defending this quote-unquote Christian boy, this little white, spoiled, wealthy, spoiled, little privileged, bratty-ass kid.
If Jesus Christ, about 5 feet 3 inches tall, curly-headed, curly-bearded, brown as a cacao bean, was to walk up to one of those little Covington Catholic boys, they'd probably scream in his face and call him, you know, that word.
Yeah, and call the cops on him, too, right?
Yeah.
You know, they call the cops on him, too, or try to kill him.
So many of these parochial schools, especially the ones that are gender segregated, produce toxicity in their output, because they preach and teach the supremacy of the white male, even if they don't say it overtly. Because, again, where Roman Catholicism is concerned, there's no room for women. Women are there to have babies and cook meals and maybe occasionally take care of daddy and the kids when they're sick. But women have no agency inside the Roman Catholic, classic Roman Catholic worldview. You know, unless you want to be Mother Teresa and be all shriveled and dried up and utterly deny your sexuality and walk around pretending that you're having sex with baby Jesus in your dreams or some other bizarre fantasy. And even, even as she lay dying, Mother Teresa kind of looked up and went, I think I've been had.
Right. And not to mention to satisfy the lust of men, right?
Oh, yeah. That's female humanity's job one, is satisfying the lusts of men.
Right.
And having babies for the men and the men in the church.
And cooking and cleaning and taking care of the house, right?
And cracking an ice cold beer and having it waiting for hubby when he comes through the door.
That sounds like all.
And
the
if
family,
if hubby
right?
decides to beat her up a little bit, then she needs to ask what it was that she did to make him so damned angry. I don't know. Most of the monotheistic religions of whether it be Islam, Judaism, or Christianity, I have no idea how any of those religions have any female members.
Right. That's why I called you up last week and talked to you about the Gillette commercial that they were pissed off about. You know, screaming, screeching, shrieking. You know, Fox News Channel was with Brian Kilmeade and Greg Gutfeld, and the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Fox Bob was screeching, shrieking, and screaming about that Gillette ad commercial last week. You know, about toxic masculinity. It was teaching people not to bully anybody or each other. You know, show respect. You know, do the right thing, right?
Yeah, that's just too hard.
It wasn't about taking their manhood away from them as they perceived it. You know, those on Fox News perceived it. You know, that's like you said, man. You know, these churches or these schools teach toxic masculinity. And what can we all do about that, Bob? To make sure that we don't produce any more future or near future bullies.
There have to be more of us than there are of them. But remember that part of the assault on public education by the white wing in this country is to make more people dependent on the Covington Catholics of the world if they want their children to have a good education. Look at the way that Georgetown Prep says that, you know, look, you've got a better chance of getting your precious little fella into Harvard or Yale if you come here and pay us $40,000 a year than if they go to public schools.
Right. Because, well, Dana Lush's kids go to private school. Her kids go to private school. I don't know if they're Christian private schools or not, but her kids go to private school nonetheless. I heard her say this on her radio talk show a million times over, you know?
Well, I pity you, Reggie, because, well, you've actually listened to that program. All I ever do is run clips. If I actually dedicated some portion of the precious finite time that I have on this planet to listening to that program, I would probably be beating my head against the desk just from the volume of the sheer stupidity pouring out of the speaker over the course of a couple of hours.
Right, but, you know, like you said, Bob, these guys go to this church or get taught in these private Christian schools that have to pay $30,000 a year. I mean, who has that kind of money unless you're wealthy?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. They are wealthy. Mommy's a Veep, that one Sandman kid, mommy's a Veep for Fidelity Investments, and daddy's some sort of executive. So, you know, they've got it laying around to do with.
Right, but don't you think that these kids should... What would happen when they graduate? Either go to college or have to go out and get a job or find one. You know, most people have to work for what they have, what they've earned, right? I know you do it all the time. But I mean, these employers are not going to hire, idiots. You know what I mean? They want to make money, not lose money.
Yeah,
right?
but there's no as I think we have had amply proven to us over the course of the first two decades of this century, having had an education and a diploma that reads Yale or Harvard or is no guarantee that the person with the diploma ain't an idiot. Look at the 8-year reign of error of Dim Leader, and God knows, look at Brett Kavanaugh.
Right, he's an idiot, right?
You know, to this day, I would rather have somebody sitting up on the Supreme Court who knows what it is to work for a damn living.
Right. You mean like yourself?
No, not like me.
You mean like a blue-collar worker?
Well, no, I mean, to sit on the Supreme Court, you've got to have a law. Well, I don't know. You may not have to. But the thing is, you want somebody with some common experience, or at least a modicum of empathy for what it is to live in this country and carry the billionaires on your back like working people in this country do day in and day out of every day of every year.
Right, like slaves, right? So to
speak. No, I'm
like
not going to make the slave comparison, man, because they ain't no slavery but slavery.
Right, but you saying average working people like
anybody who has to make it. I saw a woman affected by the shutdown today who is in the middle of chemo for stage 2 breast cancer. And she said, if it comes down, she said, when cancer is in your budget, she said, if it comes down to the rent or cancer or chemo, chemo's going to win.
Right. I don't want her to die. I mean, I hope this doesn't spread. And I hope this doesn't spread from her breast and beyond. Cause you know, she could die from that. Right, Bob?
Oh yeah. The trip from stage 2 to stage 3 is not a long journey at all.
Yeah, because I'm sure she probably got family that cares for them, you know, like kids and a husband or something.
Oh, yeah, there were little children playing in the room there as she was talking to the reporter.
Yeah.
I think it was Mariana Mariana Atencio from MSNBC. Hey, Reggie, I gotta wrap it up, buddy, but you have yourself a good evening, and you say it's cold down there. You stay warm, my friend, all right?
Yeah, you do too, Bob. I'm sure it's cold up there from where you live, right?
You know, it wasn't such a bad day. It's actually 71 degrees in the Fabulous Horn Studios right now, thanks to a couple of bottles of propane. So
right,
yeah. Well, you take care, y'all. Right?
Yeah, okay. You do too, Bob.
All right, later, Reggie.
Stay warm yourself. Dude.
All right,
man.
Bye now. That's Reggie calling from Decatur. That's our buddy. Let's see. Okay, so we got about 11 minutes left in the program, and we'll go back over to the other line. And a reminder, we have 350 $51 to finish the evening, and $751 to finish the month of January by Thursday, so that we can do fundraising free radio for the following week. Hey, welcome to the program. Is that you, Flavio?
Yeah, that's me. How are you?
How did I know? I know because I recognize the area code.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm crestfallen. My eldest sister, who lives in Brooklyn, she wants me to watch that hour and 46-minute video, and she says that she, too, went on the bandwagon, and now she's having doubts, and I'm like, where to begin, you know?
You want to walk through this real quick? Because I took
I'll even take notes.
I took those two hours out of my precious finite existence on this planet, and I'm really kind of pissed off that I had to.
Yeah, a movie would have been better.
Being there is a lot more fun. It's more scary now since we're actually living through it.
Yeah.
Here's how I approach the whole thing. There's something that happens before anybody turns on the first camera that is really important in all of this. And that is, why does a tax-exempt institution that is not supposed to engage in politics send an all-white male class to go to Washington, D.C. to try to take constitutional rights away from half or more of the people in this country? If those little shitheads had not gone to the March for Life, none of this ever would have happened. Because you know what? The multimillionaire for-profit media, Flavio, would damn sure not have covered a bunch of hoteps giving shit to a bunch of Native Americans who were celebrating their first ever indigenous march on that day.
Now, what does Hotep stand for again? I thought they were called Black Hebrew Israelites.
Hebrew Israelites doesn't that come from the Department of Redundancy Department?
Yeah, I know, but that's
Hoteps is a shorthand term.
It stands for.
And it's an old, unlike anything in the Book of Mormon, is actually an old Egyptian word.
Right, Hotep. That's what I was thinking, like the hieroglyphs and the god.
But they're a cult, and they hold that real, actual, no-kidding Jews aren't actually real, no-kidding Jews. They are.
Right, I knew that. And they're as annoying as the Westboro Baptist crowd, but...
Yeah, think of them as a group. You've got it nailed right down to the ground. They are an extremist African American version of Westboro Baptist. They hate gay people. They hate trans people. They hate lesbians. They are hyper masculine. That's the best description I've ever heard, Flavio.
That wasn't me. That was the Phillips who said that.
Okay.
They made that comparison, and I thought that was pretty apt.
And the SPLC has made, Southern Poverty Leadership Council has made no bones about... Southern Poverty Law Center, sorry. I was thinking of the SCLC, not the SPLC.
Yeah, they're straight-up hate group.
Yeah, they are. And so they were being shitty to the Native Americans.
But they wouldn't have been covered by the...
Oh, no, the multimillionaire for-profit media would never have even heard of it. And it wouldn't have gotten it wouldn't have gotten 15 seconds worth of coverage.
Krishna or something, or be about as significant as that. They're in every airport, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So what's the news value in that?
Right. So... What happens in the video is that there is back and forth. The Hoteps were going after the Indians, and then the Hoteps went after the white boys, and then the white boys got into it, and then the white boys went after the Indians. Just because they're the second step in the process does not mean they were not involved in the process.
Correct.
And now, the one thing
video of them taunting the. Can you send that to me? The video that they were taunting the woman that walked past.
If you're on Twitter, it's on my feed. I tweeted
it. It's on the Twitter feed. Okay.
But I do. I want to come back to, and I got corrected by Ron and Raleigh. It's not the Haka. It's just Haka, and everyone
it's Haka,
Haka yes. is, and everyone is unique and individual. But of all the people on planet Earth who don't need to be culturally appropriating Haka, the heirs and assigns forever of the Roman Catholic missionaries who tormented Polynesia are probably pretty high on the list. But again, if you watch that full video, you'll watch one of these little Covington Catholic assholes rip his shirt off and start doing Haka.
And it was incorrectly classified as the tomahawk chop or something.
Oh, no, they did the tomahawk chop too.
They did that too, yeah.
Oh, because see, that started at Florida State University because they're the Seminoles. And
okay.
Florida State actually, if I recall correctly, went to Seminole Nation and said, you know, do you mind? We're not doing this to make fun of you. You know, we're embracing the heritage, or so the story goes. And they said, yeah, okay. So then the Atlanta Braves fans picked it up. Mm-hmm. And that's where the tomahawk chop really got big. And then it expanded, for instance, I saw it in Kansas City on Sunday at the AFC Championship game. Everybody at Arrowhead Stadium doing the tomahawk chop and the chant. Not a good look for them this particular weekend. And if the Goddess of Irony had a hand in things, that might be why they lost. And so these kids, you know, that wasn't one of their cheers, Flavio. They did that as a direct mockery of the natives who were there.
Mm-hmm.
People, by the way, whose ancestry goes back, a few millennia more than any of the privileged, entitled white boys in that school.
Yeah, I just can't believe my eldest sister who lives in Brooklyn would even. But the media is doing it too, you know.
Oh no, the media are who is driving this.
Hmm.
They're the ones who are putting out the whole. There was a rush to judgment, jump to conclusions, because any time a right wing PR flack shop puts out some bilious crap, the multimillionaire for-profit media jump on it like ducks on stale bread,
which is not good for them, but
yeah, right. But that's why this is happening, and you cannot divorce this PR firm from its origins and its ownership. And it is the ideological bastard child of none other than Carl fucking Rove.
Yeah, I mean.
But isn't it amazing that there is an on-demand network of white wing PR shops that are available at a moment's notice.
And we don't have that. There's nothing.
No.
Remotely resembling.
Nope.
Nothing even remotely resembling that on our side. Right?
Right. And so since that, you know, that creates a playing field with only one team on it. So, well, I mean, this is a PR shop. I mean, they're professionals, and we certainly have to run with what they say, because we've got to make sure that we get both sides out there, because both-siderism. I hate it, Flavio. Drives me nuts.
I'm crestfallen. But, you know, I realize this could be thrown at me, but what I notice is that the need to belong is so strong that it just it clouds out any, you know. And God knows, I mean, I was guilty of that myself, at, you know, trying to belong, you know, so. You know, my middle name is Henrik, and when I remember when I first came here and I was in high school, you know, I asked people to call me Henrik because I didn't want people calling me Flavio and mangling my name, and I didn't want them to know that I was other than
Were one stupid one of the boys. You were one stupid kid away from being Flava Flav.
Yeah, and so in high school, you know. But then after about a year or so, I just said, no, fuck it. I'm going with my name, and that's that, and fuck them.
And see, I mean, if I can dare interject this, the idea of you sort of hiding from being Flavio blows my mind, Flavio, because...
In high school, yes.
Well, but in my case, or from where I stand, I don't know how that name has survived for 2,000 years, but it has. I mean, that's a direct back reference to the Flavian dynasty.
Correct.
I mean, you can go over and say, oh, hi, Flavio here. That's my fucking amphitheater over there.
Exactly.
Because Il Colosseo ain't Il Colosseo.
No.
It's the Flavian Amphitheatro. And mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm butchering it and mangling it, so you'll just have to forgive me.
No, you're right. Yeah, and but you know, and my father too is guilty of that. He wanted, you know, he wanted all his kids to fit in, and so he shortened our names to first and last. When you know that in the especially Portuguese and Spanish naming convention, you have a first name, a middle name, a matronymic, and a patronymic.
And the introductions in front of a dinner party alone can make dinner go cold.
Exactly, and you know, and so for a while I just, you know, went with Flavio Reis, you know, R-E-I-S, you know, no, my name is Flavio Américo de Seis, you know, and that's the way I write it now. It's like, you know, fuck it, I'm not.
You ditched the Enrique.
No, that's just my middle name. I didn't, you know, you can go with or without your middle name. You know, I'm not Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. But, you know, my patronymic is Américo de Seis, not Reis. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Well, you know, and some of that clings on in Anglo culture, too. I happen to be the beneficiary of that. I have a first name and then a middle name and a last name, and it's my mother and father's last names.
Correct, and that only in Portuguese and Spanish culture, that only happens to the firstborn. The others aren't obligated to, you know, carry the patronymic and matronymic and patronymic. It's just the convention.
Well, that's just how it kind of worked out for me, because I was not only the firstborn between my mother and my father, I was the only born.
Uh-huh.
All my other brothers and sisters, my other brother and my sisters were half-siblings. Because it was kind of like a hillbilly Brady bunch. Mom had a kid and dad had kids and they had a kid together.
Those are all very good points, though. So first of all, that would never have happened if they hadn't gone there, all male, all boys, to basically advocate for the curtailment of women's reproductive choice.
Not the curtailment, the elimination.
Elimination of women's wrong word.
And let's wait. Let's take a moment with that, Flavio, please. It's not women's choice. I mean, it is, and I'm not trying to downplay that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is a far stronger statement to say they went to Washington, D.C. to take away a woman's constitutional right.
Constitutional rights.
Because we tend to blow past that for some reason. It is a constitutional right no less than the Second Amendment. It is co-equal with the Second Amendment. A woman's right to choose is co-equal with freedom of religion. A woman's right to choose is co-equal with freedom of the press. A woman's right to choose is co-equal with the freedom of association, the free with free speech, with the right with the right against self-incrimination. It is co-equal with the right to a jury trial. It is co-equal with the right not to have to quarter troops in her house.
Mm-hmm.
It is a constitutional right. And if we understand what these sick, religious, disgusting freaks are on about, that they are trying to take constitutional rights away from American citizens, then it becomes, to anybody who cares about the Constitution, absolutely infuriating. How dare they?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not barking at you.
No, no, absolutely. It's just that... It's overwhelming, you know.
They show up in Washington and they march with their big posters of their pictures of the aborted fetuses, and the vast majority of them are fucking men. And if men were the win, and if men were the ones who get pregnant, birth control would be in the goddamn water supply.
Correct.
And abortion would be a sacrament. And that's a fact.
That's a fact.
As we discuss this, just got a note in from Mike in Cascadia, subject line Covington Catholic. Hey, Bob, can you imagine if the tables were reversed and a bunch of Native American boys confronted a white elderly vet or a bunch of African American boys? Did that. When I saw Jake Tapper on Saturday tweet a Reason article laying the blame on Nathan Phillips, I knew this was going to happen. Oh, you knew it was going to happen from the minute it began moving around social media, because like a dog returns ever to its vomit, the multimillionaire for-profit media will return to both siderism. It's practically, I mean, if Einstein had lived long enough, he would have identified it as a universal goddamn law.
You want to know the tremendous irony of it all? She and I went to La Crosse Aquinas High School, and she should know that those kids are super racist. Okay?
You experienced it.
I experienced it, and, you know, to a lesser extent, she did too. You know, but is she forgetting that? You know?
Yeah, well, obviously, I can't speak along those lines.
I can't.
But you know, when I see what Mike in Cascadia said, Flavio, I don't have to imagine, because I know the paroxysms of furious homicidal rage that White Wing America went into, because a couple of African-American football players simply took a knee during the national anthem and they screamed, "Oh, they hate the troops! Why do they hate America, MAGA?"
Yep.
I don't have to imagine, because there's always some aspect of white-wing behavior with which you can compare any of this stuff, and the white wing never comes out looking better than the other side. And so that's why the multimillionaire for-profit media have to do as much as they do to rehabilitate it, because remember who owns. I don't care who the personalities are. Remember who owns the multimillionaire for-profit media, because the multimillionaire for-profit media are owned by multi-billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And almost without fail, they ain't out there voting liberal Democrat, because the big money seldom, if ever, votes that way.
Yep.
Well, Flavio, we've run over a little bit, but I'm glad you called in. I always enjoy our conversations.
No, I'm. Thanks again for the help.
I'm not saying take my word for it.
I'm just saying I'm always bewildered. And again,
Get out a bottle of good deep in the winter brandy in Wisconsin, and give it that hour and 46 minutes. If I'm wrong, you write me back and tell me.
Life's too short, really.
But that's the thing. If you watch it, if you watch the hour and 46 minutes, and you come back and you disagree with anybody about it, it doesn't matter. Their mind's made up.
Oh, he's got invited to the White House.
Oh, of course.
So it's all good.
Yeah, I wonder if the Coverington Catholic boys are going to show up in blackface. I bet Trump would love that. I bet he'd think that was hilarious.
Oh, he'd think it was a hoot.
I wonder, I noticed on the table there for the Clemson players last week, I didn't see any hate filet. Maybe he'll get, they're kind of pricey. I don't know. I think they'll probably just get Dave's singles there like the Clemson football players did, and Big Macs. He's partial to those. He likes the special sauce. See what you do to me, Flavio. You take care, my friend. Stay warm.
You too, buddy.
All right. Bye now. That's our buddy Flavio. I think the world of him. And, hey, we're 11 minutes past, but that's okay. We will be back for prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow, and I can give you advance warning. We've already got a couple of Jim Damn Dandies waiting. So you might want to go ahead and, it's cold weather. It might snow. You might not be able to get out if you're out of duct tape or anything. So just check your duct tape supply and make sure the hockey puck's in good working order, because I think we're going to need it early. And again, thanks to everybody. Thanks to Nydia for the challenge beginning late last night and into this evening's program. Thank you, Harold. Thank you, Hung Like Jesus. Thank you, Otto DeShot. Thank you, Mark. God, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out. Let me make sure here. Working. Oh, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Yeah, that right. And thank you, to our subscribers this evening. Thank you all so very much for all you do to keep this little ongoing conversation on the air. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening in the chat room to Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.